Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show, Sundays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine.
Black by Color Only Day here on CNM with our very own Vincent Brown out of Durham, North Carolina. Black by Color Only is one of the most informative shows on CNM, giving us the reasons that the apostles of blackness are leading this nation in the wrong direction, along with the left. And Vincent will come down on the right too when they do not do what is right. Listen to the wisdom of Vincent Brown on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will find out that the media is lying to us too, along with the leftists in our government. Some of the right are too, and in Hollywood also. He will make you use your mind and think a bit before making a rash judgment. That is Black by Color Only, only on CNM at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, where America always wins.
Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans who apparently have no option to do.
Show me where it says that protest is supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
They go low, he kicks.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. So even if he lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face. And then gotten out of the race. He would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially, and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding.
This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
Hello, everybody. Hey, Joe. I got Joe Gibson's in there.
Hello. Hey. Happy Friday.
Yay. It's the best, one of the best days of the week.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, except for Sundays.
Oh.
Well, that's true.
Can you hear me?
Hello, Joe. Hello, Joe.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you can hear me or not.
Sure can.
All right. What's going on?
Oh, not much. We're getting ready to discuss that enacting of comprehensive voter integrity laws. And I've already got two of those 111 numbers sitting in there.
How'd you make out with your voter integrity? How'd you make out with that?
Well, I was getting ready to send them out. And Lori kept sending me things with where she was doing stuff with them, and so I kind of held off, and I've got them all
what
ready.
What do you mean?
Out.
What do you mean? We had the final product last month, Lori, when did we finish it? Last Tuesday, right?
It was, I sent it out a week ago Thursday night.
I kept getting emails from you, so. But I've got about four of them sent out. So far,
because you know, I kind of wanted to kind of get everybody kind of hitting them at once, so we can get some, you know, draw some attention to it, you know.
Yeah, I've got.
I mean, I did it on the day I said I was going to do it, and I called them on the day I said I was going to do it. I called them on my podcast show, grilled them. I had another guy on my show grilling them. We asked about the certification of the voting machines in Maricopa County. I called Oregon. They're voting. Integrity thing. I emailed them. I called Georgia, called Florida. So you know, I'm not going to call all of them, but I emailed pretty much, I would say, about 45 states.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've got them sent to several radio stations here in town, KIVA and KKOB, which are the two that are the biggest. And then I've got one sent off to Congressman Yvette Harrell, one to the Attorney General, Raul Torres, got one sent to the New Mexico Republican Party, one sent to the Santa Fe New Mexican, and Albuquerque Journal so far.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I just hope everybody did what they were supposed to do. You know, that's all. You know, I mean, because this is easy doing this stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, because let me tell you something. What they got in store for us with the digital currency, they're going to put the test run out probably in about 6 months, and that'll take about a year and a half to implement it. They're going to have they're going to have your digital currency. They're going to shut you down. There'll be no more cash transactions. And they're going to have total control. The IRS, they're coming after everybody. They're already coming after me. I got a thing in the mail from the IRS already for they want to look at my 2018 taxes. So they're already busting my balls. So, you know, we knew this was happening with the 80,000 IRS agents. So, you know, this is what they're doing. They're shutting everybody down. They're coming after you, especially if you've got a conservative or a libertarian or green party. If you're not liberal and you're not anti-gun and a Marxist, communist, Antifa, George Soros backing son of a bitch, then they're coming after you, you know. So, you know, we got to put our bootstraps on.
Yeah,
we got
to
fight.
Yeah, I meant to ask you about that. Like, what exactly, is there something that they're focusing on with the IRS coming after you? Like, They said triggered it. Is it an audit or just an inquiry or what?
It's an inquiry about my 2018. They're saying I made $199,916 in 2018, and plus then Amazon. I made some money with Amazon also, and a couple other things. And they said I didn't pay my state income tax for North Carolina, which is a lie. And so. They're just coming up with all kinds of, you know, so they wrote me a big long letter and said I got to contact them within 30 days and stuff like that. So, you know, that's what they're going to do. I don't owe them no state income tax for really constitutionally, you know.
Yeah.
So, that's what they're doing. They're looking, probably digging through my bank records. I mean, I'm running for public office, so obviously what happened? Last year I ran for public office, you know, and in the last IRS agenda, I guess you could say, their term or how they look at people. So now this term, they're going to attack me, you know, and that's why. That's what they're doing. If I didn't run for public office, they probably wouldn't have dug my name up, you know. So I've been doing podcasting for 13 years, not because of that, you know.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. You're running for office. It's now it's time to, you know, get out that microscope into every single possible thing that they can. Exactly.
And it's dead wrong. It's dead wrong, you know. And I mean, really, it's unconstitutional anyway. But I won't win that. They'll come here with guns blazing and drag me off to federal prison, you know. I mean, you know, you can't beat them. I mean, you just can't beat them. There's no way around it. I mean, you got to pay. All they want is they want their ledgers and their books balanced out. That's what they want. If you balance their books for them, that's all they care. They own us. They own the Federal Reserve owns us. You know, and there's nothing we can do about it until we get people into office that can make a change. But you see, look what they're doing to Donald Trump and all his constituents. And I mean, this is just unheard of. You know,
absolutely.
They got Joe Biden on tape. Talking about $1 billion that they're not, you know, when he was VP, to fire a prosecutor.
With Burisma.
You know?
Yeah, exactly, in Ukraine. That was investigating his son's dealing and things. And no, that's fine, exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't
understand
how the IRS has diddly squat to do with state taxes. You know, so why would they, you know,
state
I don't understand
tax.
That part of it.
I don't know. They could be just
tax,
starting.
That would be your state Department of Revenue, not the IRS.
Well, they're all.
You know, the IRS is only concerned with the federal.
No, state income tax. The IRS, this is from the Department of Internal Revenue Service. This is your state income tax. That's what it says. I got a letter right here. Yep. Got it right here. Hang on. Pull it right out. It says, this is. Right here it says, you must take action within 30 days. The North Carolina Department of Revenue says,
That is North Carolina then, not the IRS. That's North Carolina
well, they're still
Department
associated
of Revenue,
with,
then, right?
Well, yeah, well, they're still associated with the IRS. It has to do with taxes, you know? So it's still their office is still in Raleigh. It's still associated with the IRS, the NC Department of Revenue Central Examination Section. So that's they're associated with. Oh, you don't think they're going to be looking at my federals too? You don't think they're just going to look at my state?
Oh, of course they are.
It'll be coming. That'll be coming next. You know, but I ran for state office.
I'm going to go ahead and bring Mike on. Mike is raising his hand in the queue here, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on real quick.
Hi,
hey,
guys
Mike.
And gal. Hey, you know they want their pound of flesh, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Remember, this is part and parcel of the liberal weaponization of everything. Remember, they went after the whole thing with the IRS and the Tea Party and all that stuff.
Yep.
You know?
I remember that.
So this is part and parcel of what they're doing right now, the weaponization of the entire government.
Yep. Yep. I know. And they don't care. You know, they don't care. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And good thing that's why with the Second Amendment, I make sure that everything I've done privately and everything like that, because I don't want them coming after me. You know, I mean, because I knew one day they're going to come after me. You know, they're going to come after everybody who owns guns. Everybody they're going to come after. You know, I mean, if you registered any of your assault rifles, shouldn't even be calling them that. If you register any of your semi-automatic rifles, they're going to be coming after you one day. You know, if they haven't already.
Yep. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know. And it's only been, and the banks are working with them to make it even easier, mm-hmm. you know, by implementing new categories, categories to identify firearm and ammo purchases through the credit card companies. It's a lot easier to identify and flag those things down. So it's like you don't even have to register them anymore. They already know.
Nope.
You know, because they've already made subcategories.
Correct.
You know, are you buying an actual firearm or are you buying ammo or accessories? You know, they've categorized it. So it's like they already know, oh, you bought a firearm. They might not know but they know that you bought a firearm and how much you spent on it, you know, and that flags you. I'm sure that they're storing that information in an NSA freaking data farm somewhere.
Yeah, but you see, that Amazon in 2018 owed me $64,000 in back royalties, okay, royalty payments for our publishing company, and they ripped me off. And I did a show on, podcast show on that too, actually. And, you know, and they wouldn't pay me. And they shut down one of our publishing, self-publishing companies that we had, my family. And they're still selling our products. They're still selling to this day the ones that they ripped us off from. You know, because CreateSpace was a self-publishing platform. And so we took all our classic cartoon movies that we had and all our downloading streams, and we had them on CreateSpace. But CreateSpace got bought out by Amazon, and Amazon sent everybody a letter. The transition will be smooth. You don't have to do anything. We'll take all your titles and put them on our platform, and your royalty payments won't stop. After the first 90 days, they started, you got to sign this, and then now this is, you're on copyright violation, and they just started coming after they shut me down, you know, and information
Jesus
publishing.
Christ.
So it's crazy, and you can't get a hold of anybody. You call them, you can't get an answer. Who do you call? You can't call nobody. You're talking to some guy in the Philippines, and they don't care about what you have to say. You know, and it's crazy. That's exactly how they are, instead of maggot. But, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore. I just don't know anymore.
They always find a way to screw you, and somebody as big as Amazon, they know that, you know, you're not going to have a leg to stand on. You know, you're not going to be able to afford no attorney to sue them or, you know, state your case or anything. They know that they're too big. The average person has literally no resources to try to battle them for anything.
Even if you find an attorney, just finding an attorney that'll handle something like that's a nightmare. You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's impossible. It's just insane. Everything's insane. You can't win. Even if you go to court, I know the law. I know how to file all these cases. I know how to file everything. I've read. I'm a notorious researcher on that stuff. I went to a hearing August 22nd for the licensing board against the licensing board in North Carolina, and I won. I pretty much won. But the judge won't rule in my favor. She sent me. If I find the ruling. Oh, here it is right here. This is a copy of the ruling that she gives me. Listen to this. On August 22nd, 2023, the administrative law judge, Melissa Owens Lassiter, conducted a hearing in this matter. The undersigned hereby establishes the following post-hearing order. Now, I'm the petitioner, and the NC Private Protective Services Board is the respondent. It says, paragraph 1, the respondent shall file the proposed its proposed final decision affirming the board's decision to deny petitioner's unarmed guard registration within 15 days of this order or on or before September 15, 2023. Paragraph 2. Petitioner shall file any exceptions and or proposed changes to respondent's proposed order within 15 days following petitioner's receipt of respondent's proposed order or no later than September 29, 2023. You know, I can't understand anything that means. What do they mean by that? He's saying that they want us to make the judgment. I don't get it. I don't understand what the judge's order is there. I don't understand it. What am I supposed to draft up here? I don't get it. I already done my closing arguments. I don't understand. I have no clue what that means.
Well, it kind of sounds like they're giving them the time to acknowledge receipt of the judgment and to produce any modifications to their statements or anything that they've made. And then on the flip side, once they do that acknowledgement, then you have 15 days to respond to it and update anything that they have to say, I guess. That's kind of what I'm gathering is that it's kind of your favor, but it's giving like a last chance effort for the petitioner to acknowledge that they've received this communication and they have the chance to dispute or change anything, any statements that they've made, and then you the same way. And who knows, maybe there'll be another scheduled date or something as the result if they're disputing
well, we already had
you,
our hearing.
You know, and you're disputing
maybe
them, you know, I don't know, maybe there'll be another one, I don't know.
No, they won't have another hearing. They won't can't
like
have another hearing. Yeah, I know. That's exactly what it is. It's the runaround because she knows I won, and she just won't rule in my favor, you know?
Yeah,
they can't do what
they
did.
They want another bite of the apple, you know? They want to take another bite of the apple. That's what they want, you know? They'll get you no matter what is what it sounds like, you know? They want you. They want their pound of flesh, and they'll get it no matter what.
You just can't get no justice. I mean, I got the guy, the director of the private security thing on this witness stand, man, and I tore him apart. I was like Matlock up there. I mean, I had him stuttering, and then I got him. I said, are you aware of General Statutes 93B, Section 8? And he goes, what statute is that? I said, well, it's where you blacklist a citizen of the state of North Carolina through a licensing agency, and do you understand that that's a misdemeanor? You know, man, what statute was that? The judge is going, what statute was that? Didn't any of you go to law school? I mean, come on.
I mean, that sounds like I watched a little bit of the John Eastman trial today, and that sounds like what John Eastman did to the people in his trial, and they couldn't answer him either. I mean, it's a totally different thing, but, I mean, he brought up the law and all this stuff, and it's like they didn't know what to do with John Eastman, you know.
They know what to do. They just don't want to do it. You know, that's the thing. They don't want to do it. That's the problem.
Right.
You know, they just want. You just can't win. You can't win. You know, they won't let you win. They just won't let you win. It's the bottom line.
Especially, I mean, think about it. Look at what they're doing to all the lawyers that have represented Trump. He can't get any lawyers now. I mean, he can, but he can't. You know, that's what they're doing. They're almost forcing you to violate the general thing of the general idea of
attorney-client privilege and confidentiality. Yeah, they want Trump's attorneys to violate their attorney-client privilege and testify anyway.
Well, it's also them saying that whole axiom, a person who represents himself is stupid, is an idiot. That's what they're aiming for. They're aiming to make people start representing themselves, and that's That's not a good idea.
Well, except in my case, when I represented myself and I won, because when I did have an attorney, it didn't do me any damn good. And so I represented myself, and I actually won. So,
yeah.
There you go. That's a fun story. And I remember doing it, too, and, like, the whole courtroom, like, everybody was, like, sleeping, you know. Everybody's just kind of, like, waiting for their turn. They're all sleeping in the courtroom. And then I come up, and I'm representing myself, and, like, everybody that was sleeping was suddenly, like, the whole time I was up there, like, glued, you know. They're all, like, sitting up in their seats, you know, forward, watching everything that was going on. It was like the most entertaining fucking thing that happened in that courtroom in a long time.
Yeah.
And then what was even worse, I was so nervous because the case right before mine was a child neglect and abuse case. And I was like, oh, shit, you know, the judge is going to be in a really freaking good mood now, you know. Like, I thought I was doomed.
Crazy, man.
That was a fun time.
I mean, you just can't get no justice. I mean, you know, I mean, the system is a good system if it was an honest system, you know?
If it was an honest
system,
exactly.
I've always said what January 6th was about was redress of grievances. We didn't get any redress of grievances through the court, you know, and so we go and do the protest on January 6th. Because we wanted them to give us redress of that's what January 6th was all about, was redress of grievances, right?
Right.
Like I said,
well,
when Bushy and John Roberts said you have no standing to bring these election cases to us, well, and he didn't take them, you know, fucking standing issue. You knew something was up there, you know.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Standing is bullshit.
Well, I found some of my paperwork actually from back when we were meeting with Ron Paul and the military, and I found some of the paperwork of what I had and the warrants and the that they handed out to everybody and the orders that they gave to the grand jury. The grand jurors, and I found all my paperwork for that. I found the paperwork to how you had for the birth certificate stuff and all that stuff. And a lot of the paperwork I found. I've been looking for it because we've been talking about it, and people just don't understand what I'm trying to get at. And I can see now as the years are going by, the truth is being demented and twisted and stretched, and people aren't getting the facts to it. But mm-hmm. but just real quick, if I could just read two paragraphs here of one of the pages, and then if I could find, now what I'll do is I'll scan through it and try to find stuff, because I can't read all this. It'll take me 30 minutes or 45 minutes to read half of it, you know. So, but if you can get a legit of what it's about, it says the unanimous declaration of the sovereign people of the United States of America to restore and rehabit for the free American republics. We the people inhabiting the North American continent, free men and women, convened under God, having been granted by the Creator dominion over all the earth to restore the blessings of liberty to ourselves and the prosperity to do hereby invoke our sacred right to alter or abolish the destructive government as memorialized in the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of 1776 by declaring herewith this solemn declaration to the people of the earth and all governments and nations derived therefrom. Whereas we do not now, nor have we ever been possessed of a desire to relinquish any of our unalienable rights for the dubious benefits of limited liability or any other compelled revocable privileges of a subject class citizenship of the United States, nor to relinquish every aspect of our lives to corporations posing as legitimate governments. Whereas we do now, nor have we ever entered into a binding contract, agreement, or trust relationship with any person, living or fictitious, with the fully informed and willful intent to deprive ourselves or to be deprived by others of any unalienable rights granted to us by the self-existing creator and guaranteed by the constitutions of the free republics of North America and the United States of America, Republic C, 1787. Now, you see, understand what I'm saying? You get the logistics of it? And we drafted all this up. With Ron Paul was there. A couple other people were there. I can't go over all the names, but as a matter of fact, I got a list of a lot of them right here, actually. Robert Renfro, Sean R. Parnell, Janice K. Brewer, Mickey Dale Beebe of California, August William Ritter, Jody Rell, Jack A. Markell, Charles Joseph Crist, George Irvin Perdue, Linda Cutter, Lingle, Clement Leroy Otter, Patrick Joseph Quinn of Kentucky, and it goes on and on and on. There's some famous names in here, too, that you might recognize today. This is back in 2008, 2009 that we did this. And Ron Paul, he's in here, and many high-ranking military personnel. It's like five pages of names and everything of all the states of the people that, and the grand jurors. And then it goes in here. It goes on to the warrants, where the warrants for and everything for the governors. And then it goes to the orders, like, for instance, his first orders to the governors of the de jure grand juries of the people of the United States of America assembled under God, cease and desist all foreclosure and collection actions against the sovereign people. The people of your respective states, your family, neighbors, and friends who trust in your vigilance, the mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, children, grandparents who harbor expectations that you will first and foremost protect and preserve the prosperity being entitled to relief from a century of economic warfare waged by global money predators. See, and so you understand where we're getting at, you know, and it goes on and on and on. It's a very large documents, and these were given to certain select people at these meetings, and we formed our assemblies. And basically, like I said, Obama attacked us. And if you remember, during the Obama administration, many military people were let go and stepped down. That was because of this. And they arrested, put in prison a few people. Some people actually got killed. We were close to, I don't know if I still have the broadcast, but it was on the Republic Radio Network. It was a national broadcast, and they had about 250,000 listeners that night, and we were close to revolution, war, and they were given the order to stand down. They were like, stand down, you're not to go engage at all, the de facto, and you know, we were months away from the military getting on the 6 o'clock news and on the emergency broadcast network and making announcements to the American people that this was going to happen, blah 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 blah, and give them a big long speech, and reruns were going to be played all day long so people can understand it and get it, and you were going to see the Federal Reserve be phased out, and basically your republic be restored and re-inhabited. And it was all set up. It had international standing. This, and the military was involved. But the arguments arose where people were afraid when the food stamp cards get shut off, Social Security payments stop, and the Federal Reserve, and people are not going to understand that the currency that they were going to roll out with the gold backed currency and silver backed currency that they were going to roll out, the constitutional money they were going to roll out, that some people were going to have to feel some pain. And because the transition isn't going to be easy, but in a couple of years they were going to try to tell people it's going to work out, you know. But we were worried. I'm just saying that the American people that riots would begin in the cities if they went and arrested Obama. And, what would happen? Obviously, there would be riots, probably. And they were worried. And then they were worried about security at the time, too, because we were having a lot of conflict with North Korea and other things in Syria. And remember Syria that was going on with the chemical weapons there? So a lot of things were going on, and they just didn't want to – they just felt that we need to – they put it into a 10-year plan. They said, let's make it into a 10-year plan. Well, 10 years, that gave the deep state 10 years to destroy us. And then what they did was they got Donald Trump in there. Donald Trump was picked to go in there as president. He, you know, and that's why he said that when he was inaugurated, I am restoring your republic. He said that. He said that. It's one of his first words he said. He said, I'm giving it to you. So if you go back and look at his speech, his inauguration speech, obviously where we're at today, we're on the losing end of the stick. Some say that they're setting up the deep state, that this is all a setup. They're playing them. But I don't think so. I just don't see it that way. I think that this is a war. It's a war between good and bad. And right now we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. That's how I see it, you know. But maybe some people in the know have something going on. I mean, I've gotten some messages in the past couple of weeks from people saying that the 2018 executive order that Donald Trump ordered into place for the I got a copy of it. I'll dig it up later on. That's still in place, and that he never, you know. So it gets crazy, you know, where technically Biden's really not the president and stuff, and they're just letting them do this, what they're doing, and they're going to set them up and then show everybody the evidence. But what are they waiting for? Show what evidence? What evidence are they going to show that the election was a fraud? What evidence are they going to show people that crimes have been committed? We already know, you know, what they've done is wrong. So what evidence are they talking about? I don't understand. I don't get it. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, there's tons of evidence, but the judges won't allow it. They won't allow people to see it. They won't allow it to be submitted and validated. They're stopping the whole thing. You know, they're clogging up the sink. You know what I mean? Basically.
And
we all know it. It's there. There's tons of it available, you know, anomalies, mathematical anomalies, videos, you name it, you know, but all of them are like, oh, that's not enough.
Yeah. There's this guy that I saw a few days back on Bannon's show. His name is not Epstein, the guy that's with Trump. It was another guy named Epstein, but this guy Epstein, I think it's Robert or Roger or something like that. He was talking about how Google interfered in the election by what they did with the searches, what people search for, you know, and all that stuff. And that's another way that they interfered in the election. And it brings me back to the whole standing issue and all that crap. And you know, when you had a bunch of people in Arizona that did affidavits that sit under penalty of perjury that said that their votes were messed with or they couldn't vote at all or the printers weren't working or whatever, which was you know, this, that, and the other, and they didn't want to hear from those people because they knew they didn't want to say, oh, they said, oh, those affidavits don't count. Who are you to say that affidavits from people who know that if they're lying, they're going to go to jail, right? That's what an affidavit is. They're saying under penalty of perjury, I'm going to say this, and it's the truth because I know it's the truth. Well, it's the truth. I'm going to say it under penalty of perjury. If you can prove perjury, I'm going to go to jail. Well, they didn't want to let those affidavits be heard from, so they said, well, no, they don't count. You know, that's another unfairness to
exactly.
The law.
Exactly.
The system.
Your experience of it doesn't matter. You know, your eyewitness testimony, your own personal experience has no relevance. It's the ultimate slap in the face that's been going on systematically.
And it's like anything else. I mean, there are certain things, and we're coming up to 9/11, right? There are certain things that used to talk about with 9/11 that need to be talked about, but they refuse to talk about it, right?
Right.
if they refuse to talk about something, and they call it, well, oh, it's a conspiracy theory, right? Well, they're only used that term was created by the CIA. You know, and that started basically after JFK got assassinated.
Well, hang on a second. If you go back to 2018, right, it goes on September 12th, 2018. September 12th, September 12th. No, it was September 12th, 2023. Hang on. So in accordance with Section 202, paragraph D of the National Emergencies Act, 50 U.S.C. 1622D, I am continuing for 1 year the national emergency declared in Executive Order 13848 with respect to the threat of foreign interference in or undermining public confidence in the United States elections. Okay, this is from the White House now. It's a press release notice on continuation of the emergency with respect to foreign interference for undermining on September 12, 2018, by Executive Order 13848, the President declared a national emergency pursuant to the International Emergency Powers Act. It says, and that act says this now. It says, now this is what they're saying, it's still in effect, 1601, termination of existing declared emergencies. All powers and authorities possessed by the President, any other officer or employee of the federal government, or any executive agency as defined in Section 105 of the Title V, as a result of the existence of any declaration of a national emergency in effect on September 14, 1976, or terminated 2 years from September 14, 1976, such termination shall not affect. So the National Emergency Powers Act. And they're saying these were in effect. Trump put these in effect on September of 2018, and they're still in effect today. Now, this is what – now, let me scroll down here. Now, this is what they're saying right now. They're saying that the secretaries of the Army, Navy, and Air Force, at the direction of the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Homeland Security, with respect to the Coast Guard, when it is not operating as a service in the Navy, are authorized to order to active duty such units and individual members of the Ready Reserve under the jurisdiction of the Secretary concerned as the Secretary concerned individual members of the Ready Reserve under the jurisdiction of the Secretary concerned as the Secretary concerned considers necessary, consistent with the terms of Section 12302 of Title 10 United States Code. Okay? So now this guy says, okay, so look at Section 12302 of Title 10 of USC. If you go down and you look at the last paragraph of that section there, it says the executive order is under the War Powers Resolution Act, which is where the President and Congress declare war, which is the foundational order, a.k.a. the origin. Now, it says it has not been terminated. So this is why origin matters and knowing how legislation works and the orders of the orders. The authority to order and the ready reserve of the armed forces to active duty to address the all this stuff. Now this is published on the White House website now in 2018, the first order I read you. What they're trying to say is right now is according to the Federal Register, the Daily Journal of the United States government, says authority to order the Ready Reserve of the Armed Forces to active duty to address international drug trafficking, okay? It says a presidential document by the Executive Office of the President on May 1st, 2023. It says authority to the – it says by the authority vested to me as President by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including the National Emergencies Act, 50 U.S.C. 1601, and in furtherance, Executive Order 14059 of December 15, 2021, imposing sanctions on foreign persons involved in the global illicit drug trade, which declared a national emergency to address the unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States posed by the international drug trafficking, it is hereby ordered as follows. Section 1, Emergency Authority, to provide additional authority to the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Homeland Security to respond to the national emergency declared in Executive Order 14059. The authority under Sections 12302 of Title 10 United States Code is invoked and made available, according to its terms, to the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretaries of the Army, Navy, and Air Force, at the direction of the Secretary of Defense and Secretary of Homeland Security with respect to the Coast Guard when it is not operating as service in the Navy, are authorized to order to active duty such units and individual members of the Ready Reserve under the jurisdiction of the Secretary concerned, as the Secretary concerned considers necessary consistent with the terms of those section, of the subsections I read earlier. So the general provisions, nothing in this order shall be construed to impair or otherwise affect the authority granted by law to an executive department or agency or the head thereof, the functions of the director of the Office of Management and Budget relating to the budgetary, administrative, or legislative proposals. B. This order shall be implemented consistent with the applicable law and subject to the availability of appropriations. Section C. This order is not intended to and does not create any right or benefit, substantiative or procedural, enforceable at law or equity by any party against the United States, its departments, agencies, or entities, its officers, employees, or agents, or any person thereof. And I can't read who signed it. It says it's the White House, April 27, 2023, file 4-28-23, 8:45 a.m., FR document 2023-09318, billing code 3395-53-P, published document. That's all it says. So I can't read the signature. I don't think that's Biden's signature there. But so what's that mean? Are we under an act of war right now? I mean, are we under emergency powers right now? I mean, I don't get it. I just don't understand. And nobody will answer my question when they sent me this either. So I don't understand what they're trying to get at here. But this is real. This is real stuff now that was published. Now, you can go look it up. I'll send it to you guys if you want. You can look it up. Now, this was published in the Federal Register, the Daily Journal of the United States Government, they put it in the National Archives, presidential document. So I don't understand how that has to do with anything with the elections. I don't understand.
I've got Joe from Montana in there once who raised his hand. So
all right.
Here he is.
Okay.
Hey,
man, I don't know what. Hey guys, I don't know what the document is that you were reading.
Hey,
Lorraine. I was going to come in here hot, pretending I was hot, because when I first saw the icon for the show, I thought it was your show, Joe. And I'm saying to myself, what's Joe got a show on Fridays for? And then I saw with co-host Lucy Libertarian. So I was going to come in here thinking it was your show, Joe. And I was going to say, hey, Lorianne, just because I recommend you to everybody doesn't mean you can go whoring yourself out to be a co-host for every show host.
Well, when I'm whoring myself out, I'm not getting paid for it, so... You can't
I know,
be a whore if you're not getting paid.
Right? And then I realized it was Bob's show, so I said, ah, oh, shit, I can't come in there like that. But to answer your question, Joe, I didn't know, just by listening to you for the last 2 minutes, I wouldn't know what the document's about by the question that you just posed. Yeah, I think it's a declaration of war against Russia, because the Ukrainian foreign minister and a retired general said that we're going to have a hot war with Russia pretty soon. So that's probably
that's what I've been hearing too.
Probably it.
That's what I've been hearing.
And
I've been
China.
Hearing the same thing.
Well, that's what there's a clip from an old Tucker Carlson show from Fox when he had when he was still on Fox when he had Glenn Beck on that, and one of the things that Glenn Beck said was by 2025 we're going to be in a hot war with China, Russia, Iran, you know, all these bad actors, you know, in a hot war, not a proxy war, a real war. So yeah, that might very well be, you know.
It just might be, but if it's a hot war, you know it will last only 5 seconds.
But, Joe, you didn't hear what I said earlier.
No,
I said earlier, Joe. What is it then? This guy's saying here's another way of looking at bipartisan legislation and seeing you're watching world history and special operations take place. This is a special ops guy I know. He says origin matters. He says it's important to know the legislation and the tiers of order and how they function. He said the War Powers Resolution Act of December 20th, 2019, which is 50 United States Code 1541 to 1550. Okay, it says Executive Documents 2021 memo tells the Secretary of Defense to adhere, abide, uphold, enforce to the authority and the functions vested into the President of Section 1550. And it says the President of Section 1550 is Donald John Trump. It's that the only person who can federalize reserves and National Guard to active duty is the President, 10 U.S.C. 12304 and 12406. So Section 1550 says 180 days, Joe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got you there. So what they're doing, either they made a mistake and they put in Donald Trump, or they're anticipating Donald Trump and they made a mistake by publishing it. Maybe that's why the guy sent you this publication, because it wasn't supposed to be a leaked document. So that's my guess.
But they're saying Donald Trump is still in charge.
Trump is going to get elected.
Well, he's technically still in charge, they're saying, Joe. Because if you go by Section 1550, only Donald Trump, if they publish that, if that's ordered, that legislation, and that War Powers Resolution Act of December 20th, 2019, which is 50 United States Code 1541.
Right, I got
okay.
you. I got you, Joe. But
right.
this is my explanation for it. Either they put in Donald Trump by accident when they should have put in Joe Biden, or they're anticipating Trump to come in, okay, and they did this in 2019, anticipating his return in 2024, and they're making this with him as the president in 2024. So this could be a leaked document, not really published yet for the public to see, and you got it because somebody sent it to you to give you that explanation.
Yeah.
Now, those are two potential explanations. There could be more.
All right. Okay. That makes sense because they said 180 days on March 27, 2020, was Executive Order 13912 that federalized 1 million reserve components to active duty. That was the actions of all those orders.
Well, in 2019, then he was the president then. So, I mean, so you're saying that Donald Trump is thinking of the hot war? Now, that's another explanation if the date of this document is 2019.
It says 180 days after 12/20/2019. Which is where 1 million were federalized. The federal order came in the first 180 days, Joe, March 27, 2020,
mm-hmm.
with the exec, you know? So
right.
that was the actions
so
of all those orders.
Yeah. Well, then they're anticipating that Trump, who was already in office at that time when this document was signed, they're anticipating that he's going to start a hot war, which, to his credit, he never engaged in any wars when he was the 45th. Okay, but if he's anticipating this, then it goes to what I'm saying about him. I think he's a double agent. I'm siding with Mike from Florida. Mike just thinks he's PSYOP. I think he's a double agent.
I don't think so. I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I just can't, man. There's just too many good people that are saying things. I just can't see people selling out people like that. You know,
all the people we have in Congress have sold out in some way or another. Now, the ones that have sold out the most radically are those who have taken money from the CCCP to sell America down the river, to sell land, water rights. We've sold some water rights to China. All of this is part of the New World Order. So to me, it all makes sense. Why can't Donald Trump, who was a billionaire, who sidestepped the law in order to gain a real estate empire, why can't he be a traitor?
because there's too many military people that are talking to him even to this day that I just don't think those people would sell out. And if they trust them, I have to go with what they're saying. I mean, I don't think these guys would sell out. These guys believe in the Republic. They believe in the Constitution. They'll die for it, Joe.
I know.
I mean,
they're supposed to die for us. They're supposed to be for us. But 31, or around that number, had signed a declaration wanting Biden to be the president of the United States when he was running for president.
I know. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But
hey,
you
look,
go back,
anybody
but...
can sell out. You can sell out. Somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, Joe, I'm going to kill your kids if you don't, if you don't do what I want. If you don't find a way to get that guy first, you're going to sell out to him, especially if he's with the WEF, knowing he's got, the Rothschilds behind him." Anybody and everybody can sell out. Doesn't necessarily mean they want to sell out because they want to. But if everybody here has got kids or grandkids and they come to you, you're going to sell out.
Well, that's
you're not sacrificing your family.
That's what I've heard. They're getting these people are getting desperate enough that they're gonna try and do something against Trump, against his kids. You know, against Don Jr., Eric, Ivanka. You know?
I don't know who you are, but if you were part of the of just the mob, the Irish mob, the Italian mob, the Colombians, et cetera, and you wanted somebody to do something and they were resistant, what's the next step? So as a crime lord, can do it, why can't the richest people in the world who own countries, why can't they do it? Why can't they say, do what I say, or your children, grandchildren die?
Because you can't get to my children and grandchildren because I already saw this coming.
Really?
Right, but the deal about Trump's kids, most of them, except for Tiffany, most of them cannot run for president because none of their Melania was not born here, and neither was Ivana. So Don Jr., Ivanka, Eric, Barron, they can't run for president.
To have parents who were born here? That's a controversy about the Constitution.
Well, that's the thing. From what I understand, Article 2 in the Constitution says that both parents have to at least either be born here or be living here, have been living here. And that was brought up during Obama because his dad never was born here, and his dad was never wanted to come here.
Because I'm not I'm not a constitutional scholar, so I don't know. I'm just asking.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If they're gonna go after their kids.
Why not? And Joe, your kids are not safe, okay? I don't care where you put them. All they got to do is track you, because you'll eventually have to go to your kids someday, and you're dead and your kids are dead.
Yeah, well, they got to break through, whoever's protecting them. Why do something like that? Why not just kill me and type right off the bat then? Why not,
I don't give a whoever else will be on the side of liberty. If you're going to resist, they don't want resistance, right? They're going to send a message.
Well, they did that already. They killed, remember Randy Weaver? Remember Randy Weaver? Remember Waco?
What's his name? Was it Cleveland Bundy or one of the Bundy?
No, Randy Weaver. Randy Weaver.
Yeah, Bundy was.
What they did up at the Bundy Ranch. When they killed that guy at the Bundy Ranch.
Yeah, they killed him at the car, right, didn't they?
Yeah, the card. Wow. That guy was mouthing off, though. He was mouthing off. He wasn't supposed to do what he was supposed to do. You know, he was antagonizing the FBI and stuff like that. I mean, they were wrong for killing him, but still, he was, you know, I mean, he was just a target, putting himself out there on purpose, you know. But, you know, yeah, I mean, going after people's kids and everything, yeah, we've been doing that for years. I mean, you know, but we just try to protect them the best we can, you know.
Of course. But you can't face
I'm still
going to
fight for what's right. I'm not going to sell out to the devil, evil.
Yeah, you will. If you know that your kids are in danger and you know that they know where they are and can get to them anytime they can, you will. I'm not saying you're a bad guy. I'm saying you're a father.
But sell out, what do you mean by sell out, though? What am I selling out? What am I doing?
If they want you to do something for them, if you have access to certain information or access to people that they want, and if they say, hey, Joe, and me, Joe and Laurianne and Robert and the caller, we're all going to do it. You're going to sacrifice your kids for an ideology, even if the ideology is concrete. Those are your kids.
Well, it depends what we're doing. What we're, I mean, you're using ideology, but like you got to be a little more specific. Like, what do they want me to do? Just use an example. If you're trying to use
anything.
An example, like what
they want, you, doesn't matter. If they want you to. To go to McDonald's and buy them a sandwich, or if they want you to get the access to a safe with this confidential information in there, which could hurt them publicly.
Then it's game on. Then the clock starts. The clock starts. You know, hey, I got to get them before they get me. You know.
Well, yeah. But
remember. You know, I mean, because like you said, they're going to, like, for instance, this guy or Laurianne or you are just saying, or the Big Don or whatever, you're part of the crime family and you're coming after me. Well, my job is to take you guys out then before you get to my family. You know?
Absolutely.
You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
And if you could do it, then, you know, that would be something that, that would be a message. If a civilian could do it against somebody from the New World Order, that could be a rallying point. For people,
Oh yeah, but you see, we don't know who these thugs are. Who are these thugs that operate in the upper echelon? Because they're ghosts, Joe. Because if you knock one down, somebody just replaces them, like Epstein. You know, I mean, you know, he was up there. Look at Bernie Madoff. You know, he just knock them down, and you know, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan. You know, I mean, so really, who's at the top? Who is at the top? Nobody.
The Rothschilds, there's 13 bloodlines, supposedly, right? Even if there aren't 13 bloodlines, there's the richest people in the world. I know from centuries, not decades, centuries, the Rothschilds have been practicing central banking and taking over countries via central banking. So to me, the Rothschilds are number one. Now, anybody else after that probably doesn't even matter. Like, doubt it.
Yep.
Now, the Rockefellers would be maybe number two, but I doubt it. But I could be wrong. I mean, they've had centuries to practice their craft. Any country that has a central bank, and anybody who disagrees with me, please tell me. Any country that has a central bank is owned by the Rothschilds. Does anybody disagree?
Yeah. No, you're right. There's only how many countries that are not owned by central bank? I think Iraq.
There's only a few.
North Korea. Yeah, you know. But check this out. You know, Joe. There are people out there that are waiting for the moment to probably, I don't want to say too much, but, you know, to go after these dark forces that are shaping the world today.
I fucking hope so.
I mean, look.
Hope that somehow
look,
they just rise up.
The whole thing, remember when H.W. Bush talked about the 1,000 points of light? Thing and that was all about the New World Order. Because the whole Bush family is a New World Order family. That includes George P. Bush, all the kids, the grandkids, all the great-grandkids, whatever it is, they're all New World Order people, right? So when you got a guy in Texas that takes out a New World Order guy, or when Trump took out
took out Jeff. Jeff, the way he did, that's another reason why I put him on the other side of these people that are New World Order, WEF, guys, that are probably tied to the Rothschilds. I mean, I don't know if the Bushes are tied to the Rothschilds. Probably, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But I know one thing. They're tied with Barry Satoru, who's Barack Obama's dad, and all that shit. But we'll just have to see. I mean,
the top people are in the Vatican, Church, places like that. And then Israel. Those are your top borders.
Oh yeah, and the people will try to throw you off by talking about the Masons and people like that, but
they may be lower echelon. I mean, look.
Yes.
We don't know. I think you're right. We don't know exactly who the top guy is, but my educated guess is it's the Rothschilds. And of course, you never hear about them. You always hear about Soros. You hear about Trump. You hear about some other financier. You hear about the Waltons. That's because the Rothschilds don't want all the attention paid to them.
That's right.
Because there are some unsure, people in the world.
You got what's the guy's name with the WEF? World Economic Forum.
Oh, Klaus Schwab.
Klaus Schwab. He's another one. Yeah. He might be tied with the Rothschilds.
Yeah. The other guy's name was Robert Gordon. Anybody ever hear of him?
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah. Well, we're hip deep in conspiracy right now, so,
I don't think it's conspiracy the way the world is going.
No.
Yes.
No, but there were actually a few articles that I saw that just today that really kind of surprised me. One of them came from California, and that was where one town has actually called for the complete banning of masks and vaccines, which kind of surprised me since it's from California.
Yeah.
And another
that's
one.
A good sign. Yeah.
And the other
I saw
ones
the headline.
Came from. The other ones came here from New Mexico because our governor has declared a gun violence emergency here in Albuquerque because an 11-year-old kid was killed. Well, the state is starting to come out after her, which is cool. A Democrat lawmaker actually is taking her to court over something that's going on. Then the former state representative challenging Ledger Fernandez, who is another liberal in our state, is now got somebody who is challenging her seat. And then today, Lujan Grisham signs an illegal order suspending Albuquerque residents' gun rights, which means me. And
what?
There's a lot of people
what
who
did you
are really
just say?
Coming out in arms over that one.
They suspend. What did they do?
They
suspended gun rights.
Suspended gun rights in Albuquerque.
How can she do that? She can't do that.
It's illegal. She
did it.
That's contempt of Constitution.
Yep.
Hey, who cares? She's a Democrat. Here's the reality. Legislators can do anything they want, constitutionally or unconstitutionally, as long as they have law enforcement and the judges on this side. Plain and simple. And hey, Sarge, by the way, guys, I got to go. So enjoy the rest of your night. I might come back,
Sarge.
But I can go now. So talk to you. Bye-bye.
Yeah,
all right,
man. Look,
talk to you later.
Make
sure to call in on Sunday, too.
Yeah, take care, Joe.
All right.
Hey, look, man, I've been hearing you guys on this stuff, and, man, where am I supposed to start with all the stuff you guys have put out here tonight? I mean, good Lord. Let me start with something simple. About Donald Trump's children and their eligibility, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 says, to be eligible to be president, you must be a natural-born citizen. The closest in time
to the framing of the Constitution when Article 2 was adopted in 1789, when the Constitution without the Bill of Rights was first ratified, the closest authoritative source I could come to was the Supreme Court ruling in which they defined natural-born citizen as a natural-born citizen being born of two citizen parents and born on the soil of the nation. So none of Donald Trump's children, except for Barron, who was born to Melania, who is a naturalized U.S. citizen, none of them are eligible to be president. All the rest of them are 14th Amendment citizens because Ivanka was a foreign national. She was a Czech national, I believe, and she never naturalized before any of the other children she had when Donald Trump was born. So that's an easy one, okay? That's easy. Now, I missed parts of that executive order that you were reading, Joe. I caught fragments of it. But it sounds to me, look, am I to understand that that order mobilized 1 million reservists, or was it an administrative mobilization only on paper? Because there's no way you're going to mobilize 1 million reservists and tell them to act, show up for duty or be prepared to show up for duty without word of that getting out. It's not possible.
Word did get out.
Yeah, but they didn't mobilize 1 million. There's never been a mobilization of 1 million members of the armed forces for any reserve, not even during the Operation Roundup exercises in Germany. They mobilized a few thousand, maybe 10 or 15,000. 1 million reserves, and that'd be a bigger call-up than at any time during the Vietnam War. I mean, during Vietnam War, they...
180 days it gave them to do it. Gave them 180 days to do it.
I didn't hear anyone speaking about it. I mean, all the connections I have with guys in reserves and the National Guard, nobody mentioned that to me during that time period.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be impossible to keep secret. There'd be all kind of guys complaining about it. They'd be telling the press about it. They'd be complaining. About it. Not everybody's going to be ready to go.
Sarge, it was only given to the top people, and that's it on paper. That's it.
Okay, that's what I meant. That's why I asked. I said, so it was an administrative mobilization, and it was,
yes,
what was it, a
secret ready
document? Okay,
yes.
Okay. Now, that answered my question. I got it. Okay, now the next thing. It sounds to me as though, you know, this is like a plan of exigency that any, look, we used to war game stuff when I was an operations sergeant in the military police battalion. The headquarters section was constantly war gaming things and coming up with exigent plans in the event something would go wrong with government or government was decapitated, either the state government or the federal government, and what our actions were going to be. They'd be war gaming stuff like that all the time. It sounds to me like this is a contingency plan. I mean, I might have missed something going in and out, but it doesn't sound to me like it's an order to assume control of a government that is illegitimate. And what do you do with all the actions that the president, the illegitimate president, has done in between the time you gained power and you're letting them do all these unconstitutional, illegal acts? Because every order, every law that is signed, every single action he takes officially as president would be illegitimate, null and void. You have to undo everything to the extent that you could when you did resume power.
Well, you can't have to do that anyway if he's reelected. it's just let them play the game. Let them play the game out. And what they're doing is letting them dig themselves deeper in the hole. Why do you think Nancy Pelosi took off? You know, I mean, they know what they're doing. That's from what I hear. I'm just speaking on what I'm told. And what I read, I don't know if it's true or not, Sarge. I don't know. You know, I mean, it could be. I hope it is, actually, because it'd be about time to get this thing on the road and let's get going here. You know.
Well, actually, I'm not saying that I'm necessarily opposed to it. I'm just saying, as far as constitutionality and legality, I just don't see it. I mean, like I said, if we're going to go Battle of Athens, we got to realize that's what we're doing. I don't think we should make any pretense of being constitutional about it. I mean, because
look, if it comes down to being a serf or a slave, I'd rather just go Battle of Athens and then worry about constitutionality later.
But, Sarge, it is constitutional. It's the duties of that president to do the job to protect this country. And if this country is being usurped by foreign powers and foreign entities and a cabal working within the walls of Washington, D.C., then he has to do everything he can with the people that's close to him and the military to protect this republic and protect our country, you know? So we have to let this play out, you know?
Well,
I mean, you just can't have transparency on everything, Sarge, you know?
No, I'm not saying you have to have transparency. Obviously, there's justification for the government keeping things secret. I'm not saying that you have to have transparency, but I'm saying that every single action that the president of the United States takes as president, every single one, I don't care if he's overseeing a ceremony from a head of state in a tea garden, every single action that he takes, every one without exception, must be done under constitutional authority and aegis. If he goes outside of it, it is an illegitimate action every time, no matter what the reason. That's why I said
what has Biden really done? What has he really done, though?
Well, he's a completely illegitimate president. He doesn't care about the Constitution. He violates his oath of office every day.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm saying, I'm saying if we got to take action against President Biden with this sort of scheme, I'm not going to pretend it's constitutional. I might say it's necessary, but I'm not going to say it's constitutional because I don't believe it is.
I think it is. Because the powers that are invested into that president, they give you the war power there. I've read all the powers and everything, the acts. Those are all constitutionally at the given to the president and commander-in-chief and Congress. And Congress acted, too. So Congress acted, too.
Yeah,
bipartisan.
Well, what in particular, like I said, I might have missed something. What does this executive order say that gives a former president who has left office and another one has been sworn in the power to affect and command the armed forces of the United States on an executive order that only has applicability if the current president allows it to stay in place?
All right. Well, let's go.
How does the president who has left office assume any sort of command responsibility of any of the
All right. Let's go here. Well, hang on. I'll start at the beginning here with this guy sent me here. Okay. Let's start at the beginning here, all right? And then you'll be able to see. Because it starts right at the beginning of everything that's going down, all right? So it says, all right. He has not revoked Executive Order 138223. It's still very much intact and current. War Powers Resolution Act 1550, still not terminated. Defense Production Act amended March 2nd, 2020, extended that day to September 2025. One means Biden hasn't done when media says he invoked it. It was only approved, and two, it has not been terminated. When media says Biden has sent in reserves to two, and it goes dot, 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 that's under the WPRA 1550 and Executive Order 13912, which is the order where CIC DJT federalized 1 million reserves to active duty, proving any number of reserves media shows Biden doing is coming out of that 1 million. One opportunity, denied, canceled, or not going does not terminate laws and orders. If you think so, you're doing yourself and others an injustice. All right? It says Biden has extended every single executive order with a national emergency, 11 by CIC Trump, for 2 years in a row now. Why? Why, if there's no operation, why, if there's nothing happening, I didn't report the military tribunals coming in mid-2023. That was the New York Times. And none of you saying this BS are going there to see them anyway. So stop worrying about what you can't or haven't seen yet and focus on why the War Powers Resolution Act of 1550 shows a war going on in the U.S. and why Biden extended EOS that make zero sense for his presidency and administration. We're having a debate here, so I'm reading you what somebody's saying, Sarge. I hope you understand that, right?
Right. Yeah, I got it.
All right. So every single law and order is still under the military occupancy law of war manual and federal continuity directives 1 and 2, which form the operational outline. All right? Now, law of war manual reissued June 12, 2015, 4 days before CIC Trump rolled down the escalator to announce his 2016 candidacy. All a coincidence, I'm sure. All right? So now if you – and then it gives you an example, the DOD Law of War Manual 015 updated December 16th. I got the PDF manual here. He sent me a copy of it. He said, here's another coincidence. Federal Continuity Directive 1 issued January 17th, 2017, 3 days before CIC Trump took to his oath and told the people, we're taking the power out of D.C. and giving it back to you, the people. Remember he said that?
Yeah.
Roman numeral 3, a.k.a. 3, means this FCID 1 cancels what came before it. So that means start with this one. Now he gives me the January 17th, he gives me the documents here, the PDF document. He gives me what we just talked about earlier. He says another coincidence here. A continuality in itself, all pun intended, federal continuality of Directive 2 implementation phase issued June 13, 2017, 4.3 months after CIC Donald Trump took his oath. Okay, so operation dates of FCD 1, 2018 to 2022, operation dates of FCD 2, 2020 to 2024. Okay. So then he sends me another PDF document, Director 2. He says there's five main issues under those, all coincidentally, of course. The most recent issue being April 2023, titled Reconstitution Manager's Guide, with the most recent law inside of it being Donald John Trump's from December 2020. Said, here's old freaking Biden president now for 2.5 damn years and can't even have a law, sneeze or wet or fart, in continuity of government passed by a bipartisan legislator. He said, go ahead and read the FEMA Reconstitution Manual's Guide PDF, and I'll point it out to you. He says, the Department of the Interior Strategic Plan for fiscal year 2018 to 2022 is our bold vision for the future under President Donald J. Trump. Yet another coincidence from the letter of the Secretary of Department of Interior, and he gives me a copy of that letter there. I'm not going to read all that. It says, clearly just another coincidence on a government site. The Federal Election Commission plans for 2018 to 2022 and 2024. So in other words, it says another coincidence date is January 1st, 2020 to September 30th, 2024. Coincidentally, before November 2024, and also well within the Defense Production Act amended the following March of 2020, after January 1st, 2020, and within the termination date of the DPA September 30th, 2025. So basically what he's saying here is he wraps it all up here. He says, coincidentally, it just takes a little Alabama math and reading. Why are the most recent changes to the Merit Systems Protection Board fiscal year 2024 show only laws from the CIC Donald John Trump page 19 on documents? Another coincidence, right? I'm sure. So he says, Executive Order 13848 extended. For this reason, the National Emergency Sarge declared on September 12, 2018, must continue in effect beyond September 12, 2023. Therefore, in accordance with Section 202, Paragraph D of the National Emergencies Act, 50 U.S.C. 1622, Paragraph D, I am continuing for 1 year the National Emergency declared in Executive Order 13848 with respect to the year of foreign interference and the undermining of public confidence in United States elections. Now, do you get it, Sarge?
I get it. So he's declaring an emergency with regard to the integrity of the election system. Now, what is there anything in that order that you're able to get? Because I didn't see anything. Again, I might have missed it.
Well, go to the press release, Sarge, of the national emergency with respect to foreign interference and the undermining of the elections on September 12, 2018. and it was by Executive Order 13848.
Okay, and what are the ramifications of this order insofar as actions of the chief executive? Exactly what is he going to do with regard
to
the murder?
Okay, I'll tell you right now.
What actions?
If you go to 1601, termination of existing declared emergencies, it says all powers and authorities possessed by the president, any other office or employee of the federal government, or any executive agency as defined in Section 105 of Title V, as a result of the existence of any declaration of a national emergency in effect, September 14th, I think you got the dates wrong here, but are terminated 2 years from that date of September 14th. So therefore, so basically what we're saying is any action taken or proceeding pending, not finally or concluded, determined on such date, or any action proceeding based on any act committed prior to such date, or any rights, duties that matured or penalties that were incurred prior to such date. For the purpose of this section, the words any national emergency in effect means a general declaration of emergency made by the president. And that goes to Public Law 94-412, Title 1, 101, September 14, 1976, 90 Stat 12255. And that goes by the U.S. Code, U.S. House, if you go to U.S., if you go to, sorry, go to https://uscode.house.gov/view.xhtml. Okay,
okay,
now I'll give it to you. All right.
Okay, I got a question for you. Do you know of any actions that have been undertaken in furtherance or in pursuit of this order?
Only things that with him in the military, and I'm not in the military right now, so I can't tell you.
So you wouldn't know anything specific that may or may not have happened?
They've been doing a lot of – the Air Force has been very active. He has all the flight plans of the – this guy obviously is sending me stuff that all the flight plans and planes that are landing in Gitmo. He said there's things going on and this is happening. There's special operations going on. People are – some people are being rounded up as on one side of the world. I mean, I don't want to say too much, man, you know, because I don't even know if I'm supposed to be talking about this. So, I mean,
well,
you know, so.
Unless you are a member of the organization, I mean, I know somebody might want to do you harm if you did say something, but as far as officially, like legally, the only way you're bound, you got a freedom of speech. When you discover anything, as long as you're not in that or like a member of the CIA or the armed forces and you're sworn to secrecy about it, then you can talk about anything you want to. It's like the press can. Anything the press legitimately gets a hold of, they're free to report. That means anything. Any document, any secret, anything. The only way they can be prevented from doing anything with it is if they give aid and comfort to the enemy or if they obtained it illegally, deliberately. They solicited it to come under their control illegally. If somebody tosses something over the transom and then runs away and they open the door, they don't see anybody there, and it's vanilla envelope there with all kind of secret papers in it. The press is free to report on it.
Well,
that's the First Amendment.
You said constitutionally.
Well,
you said the only person who can federalize reserves and National Guard to active duty is the president under 10
yeah,
U.S.C.
Yeah, Commander in Chief. I mean, he's
going
to send his subordinates to do it, but every order affecting the armed forces, I don't care if the guy's cleaning the latrine, it's coming from the president. Everything is with the office, everything.
So Biden is doing Trump's bidding, and he doesn't even know it because he's so senile. He says, and his executive orders all prove national essential functions.
His aides are not, even if he is, his aides
are
the people who form
that's why they're trying to lock
exactly
Trump. Maybe that's why they're trying to get rid of Trump. You know?
Well, this is very interesting, Joe. I'm going to look into this because, I mean, I don't know enough to make any firm decision on it.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to look at this. All I know is that any action any president takes has got that authority must come from the Constitution of the United States. It has to. Otherwise,
don't give my name. Listen, don't
give
my name.
No, I won't mention your name. Remember, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. The only constitutional authority a president has is what comes from the Constitution. If he gets it from anywhere else, he's acting unconstitutionally.
Right.
No, because you said they're in cooperation with Congress here. He said Congress was in on
this. Congress can do things that are unconstitutional, too. I mean, you get a Congress doing a constitutional in concert with a president doing unconstitutional shit. All of them get the authority from the Constitution.
Wait a second, Sarge. If you've got two branches of government working and coincide with each other, how can it be unconstitutional?
Because you have to look at every bit of authority the House of Representatives and the Senate has comes from Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution and the other articles of the Constitution.
You're starting to worry me, Sarge. You're starting to worry me because these guys are taking on the deep state, man. I thought you would be supportive of something like this.
No, I am supportive of taking on the deep state. Like I said, remember what I told you earlier? I said it may be necessary to go around the Constitution to save ourselves from slavery. Remember what I said?
I'm not going
to pretend that in doing so, I am following the Constitution. I'm going with the Declaration. I'm not going with the Constitution. Because there are just unconstitutional for the President or Congress to do. Just like it was treasonous for the Americans to rebel against the crown in 1776.
Yes.
It was
treason,
but they had to do it. They didn't have any other choice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I understand. All I'm trying to do is separate not necessarily what is moral and right to do, which may be rebellion, insurrection, or whatever, maybe. But I'm simply saying that it's not constitutional necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, I'm not part of any insurrection or rebellion. I assure you that.
Well, I'm not saying that. Our declaration is literally a document, an incitement to rebellion and treason. It literally is no other way to call it. On July 4, 1776, as far as the British crown was concerned, the colonies are part of Great Britain. And the revolutionaries said, no, it ain't. We're an independent nation. The only way to settle that is...
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't like succession. The succession talk, states talking about seceding from the Union. That's not right. You know, we got to keep the Union together, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I see it. I mean.
Yeah, but I'm looking at it as though, Joe, because, I mean, like I said, I don't know enough to either say it's so or it ain't. It suspiciously sounds to me, though, as though it might be unconstitutional in varying degrees. Because, like I said, I don't know of any authority that allows someone who's not sworn in the office to take actions of the government. Maybe the executive order can stay in place, but the executive order has to be executed by the
president. Well, now, wait a second. He was sworn into office when he was taking
But his term of office expires according to the Constitution, and then the next president is
Yes, but the orders can't. The orders got to succeed. The orders have to stay.
That's what I said.
You know?
I said that as long as the executive orders have not been rescinded by the person in the office, then they are in effect. But they have to be carried out by the person in the office.
That's true.
I'm not necessarily saying that one isn't true and the other isn't true at the same time, but Donald Trump's term of office expired at noon on January 20th, 2020.
Not technically, it was March 4th.
Why do you say that?
Because technically it was March 4th. If you go back in history and you look at when it really was, technically that's
no,
just
No, January
20th, that
Joe Biden was sworn in office on January
20th. Yeah, but
no,
technically,
you can't have two presidents at one time. You only got one. So one or the other was the president on January 20th because the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court swore Joe Biden.
That's a ceremony. That's ceremonial, that what they did.
No. The Constitution specifically demands that the president is not the president until he takes that oath of office. Read Article 2. It says it right there.
Yeah, but takes his office
it says shall. He shall take the oath. Doesn't say he may. He shall.
Okay. And how must he do
that? That's part of becoming the president, taking that oath. That's why the Chief Justice administers
it. Yeah, but how must he take that oath and where?
Well, they take it publicly, but it doesn't matter where it's taken, actually. Remember, Johnson was sworn in on Air Force One when Kennedy was assassinated, remember? Remember the famous picture of Jackie Kennedy standing next to Lyndon Johnson? He's got a hand on the Bible, and I think Earl Warren is swearing him in Air Force One on the aircraft. It just has to be witnessed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads me back then, Sarge, to what you must have missed in the beginning when we first started talking. When I remember what the conversations where we talked about, remember over the last few years, that I was a part of those meetings with Ron Paul and many military people. I read off a whole slew of names that were involved, and they handed out these documents of special orders for the grand juries and the Republic people and everything, and incorporate. You know. Remember those conversations we were having? Like some people,
yeah.
Like Haley Reid, here, Jeremiah Wilson Nixon.
You mean a non-natural-born citizen? The woman ain't even a natural-born citizen trying to be president.
Well, no. What happened was is that this was the unanimous declaration of the sovereign people of the United States of America to restore and rehabit the free American republics, and to re-inhabit the de jure, remember we were talking about this last night, the de jure seats, to re-inhabit those seats?
Sure.
Okay. So I got a whole stack here of information on that.
Well, look, I do know, however, we all know there are all sorts of unconstitutional shenanigans being done by every branch of government and federal government. We know. So, I know there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of unconstitutional actions being undertaken by people who hold federal title. So I accept that as a given. But I'm simply saying, though, once we become aware of unconstitutionality, we can't pretend it's constitutional even if we want to do it.
Well, let me ask you this, Sarge. Well, how about this? Like, for instance, just one thing here. It says the state taxing agencies being unlawful collection arms for the Federal Reserve System and its principal private money predators and war profiteers being repugnant to the Constitution for the United States of America, see 1787, and the abomination to mankind being corrupt beyond repair, assault upon the incarceration of the sovereign people by the government of their creation, to failure to succeed. To thefts of their wealth under the guise of legal processes being a sin and a repugnant to the Constitution for the United States of America. You're hereby ordered by these de jure grand juries to direct the man or woman occupying the office of director commissioner of a similar office of the Department of Taxation of your respective incorporated state to cease and desist forthwith all investigations, investigators, actions, prosecutions, garnishments, liens, levies, and distress against the sovereign people, all members thereof, and all accounts, trusts, artifices, and legal fictitious derived therefrom, real or imagined, as a result of tax, income tax, property tax, sales tax, and or other tax-related charges and or claims such as failure to file, failure to pay, obstruction, and or conspiracy, and actions which do not involve a flesh and blood injured party. Cease and that's just one of the orders from the grand juries that were given to the government. This goes deep, man, into all the crimes and the things that have been happening, Sarge, that we complain about every single day, that they addressed back in 2008, 2009, and flipped the script on and re-inhabited the republics. That's what I was trying to talk to you about, and that Jim Carpenter guy was trying to talk to you about, and all that stuff. We were trying to explain this to people, but people just don't get it.
Well, see, what you just read sounds more like a resolution than anything else, like the Virginia Resolution, Kentucky Resolution by John Calhoun. That sounds like a resolution, statement of intent and understanding. I didn't hear anything specific about specific crimes.
It's an order to the governors of the de jure grand jury.
It sounds like a resolution, though. But, I mean, under a grand jury doesn't have executive authority to order anyone to do anything. Grand jury makes a finding of probable cause for guilt, and they send that recommendation on to whatever prosecutor there is. Now, in some states where they allow grand juries to convene, the grand jury has convening authority to appoint a special prosecutor to prosecute a crime. You got to look at the state that you're in.
Okay. Well, then you're telling me that the grand jury, a grand juror, or can't come up with a warrant that compromises notice.
No,
each
absolutely.
And all
I know of no jurisdiction that will allow a grand jury independently to issue a warrant of any sort. No. The best any grand jury is going to have is subpoena power.
and consumers should be on high alert because yeah,
what's that noise?
Somebody's got a TV or something going.
Somebody's got a TV on.
The best thing a grand jury can do is subpoena. Grand juries are
hang on,
subpoena.
Sarge. Hang on. Robert was trying to say something. Hang on. Was that Robert?
One of the things that I was I had mentioned that thing about our governor posting that illegal gun thing here in Albuquerque. Albuquerque sits in Bernalillo County, and the latest thing has come out already about this, and it says that even a Democrat Bernalillo County sheriff will not enforce her unconstitutional
outstanding order. Hell yeah, outstanding.
And that happened.
All the sheriffs say that. I hope all the sheriffs stand up and defy this unconstitutional tyrant you got in Mexico, in New Mexico. I hope they all do.
Yeah,
shove
I was
it
gonna
right
say,
back in our face.
You know, this is where who your sheriff is matters. You know.
Yeah.
I will stand by what I've said before. Like, who you vote for your county sheriff is more important than the president of the United States, and this is a clear example as to why.
Well,
locally,
definitely true. Yeah, definitely locally, that's definitely true. But you know, but well, obviously not. But I'm saying though, but still, this order applies. According to this order, I think you might have said this, Robert, applies only to the city of Albuquerque and Bernalillo County.
Yeah, it applies to Albuquerque and the whole county of Bernalillo. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, man. I hope they defy it. You know, if it's unconstitutional. She has no authority to do it. And the state senate ought to move to either censor her or issue some sort of rebuke and threaten her with impeachment. If they have the impeachment, I don't know what you got in New Mexico. I don't know how you impeach or remove an official.
I don't think that's
even on
the table.
Whatever they can do, that's what they ought to do.
Yeah, I don't think that's even on the table here. I'm not sure if they've got a thing where we can impeach her or not.
Well, they ought to at least issue, they can certainly issue a censure of the legislature. Any legislature can do that. And they ought to issue some sort of public rebuke. Formal.
Yeah, well, I think that
at
was
at least a rebuke.
I think that was actually a pretty good rebuke because the Bernalillo County
Sheriff.
Yeah,
but that's from an individual sheriff, though. It ought to come from state legislature.
Yeah, but this one's even a Democrat, so that's actually looking pretty good.
What's this word mean, Sarge? What's this word mean? It says, what's this word mean? It says, but let me give it to thee in a sentence. It says, hereby so decreed by the sovereign people of the free American republics assembled herein. It says TESTEMEIPSO by our hands, republic by republic, herein after, following. What's that mean, those two words?
You said QEST.
No. T-E-S-T-E.
Wait, you say K?
Oh, God. T. T as in Tom.
T. Okay, B. Yeah,
no,
what?
T as in Tom.
Oh, T. Okay. Okay. Tango.
Yes.
Okay.
Then E.
Yeah. E. Right.
And then S, as in Sally. And then T again, as in tango. And then E. And now space, new word. M as in mother. E. I. P as in Paul. S as in Sally. And O. What are those two words mean?
I haven't heard that term in a long goddamn time, man. A long goddamn time, man. It's got something to do with a testimony or declaration by some kind of sovereign entity, like some kind of recognition of some sort of charter or something like that.
Okay. That's the assemblies the people formed by the guardians of the free republics. That's what I'm saying. Republic by republic here and after. And then
I
haven't
heard
that
term in years. Shit.
Well, and they come up with warrants. They come up with a de jure warrant. They come up with a de jure grand juries of the people of the United States of America assembled under God as guardians of the free republics and sole lawful authority on the land. And then that's where they get their warrants.
Well, I'm just saying. I've never heard of a grand jury with the authority to issue any sort of warrant, ever.
Well, they're not issuing it. They're enforcing it.
Even worse. even more so.
Well, they're enforcing it by serving it, I guess, onto the governor.
I don't know how every grand jury operates. I've never heard of a grand jury doing any sort of process service. The process service is either done by a sheriff or a state marshal or somebody like that, or some officer of the court, of a court. Maybe that is part of the grand jury. What state is this in?
This is for all 50 states, the Republic.
They can't do that. I mean, they can't enforce a warrant that's binding on all 50 states, and
they have 50 individual grand juries put together in all the states. They have a grand jury in each state.
Okay, so they're all operating under one law?
Well, they're operating under the Constitution.
Yeah, I try to understand how these things work. I mean, grand juries are convened under different laws, and if grand jury gets authority from state law.
What state law are you talking about?
And almost every state has some sort of laws regulating grand juries, ones that are convened by prosecutors and ones that are convened by citizens, because many states have citizens' grand juries. But they got rules, and you got to look at each state to see what the rules for the citizens' grand juries are in those states. And one state's rules cannot be binding on another state.
No, sorry, you're wrong.
You can't issue
right
them together in a collective.
If you get 26 souls together, that creates a de jure grand jury in the people's commonwealth of
land. So each one of these grand juries is issuing this to their own governors separately?
Yes, there's 26 souls.
Okay, well, I guess they could do that. I guess they could do that, then, sure. I'm thinking
so it's 26 people in each state.
Okay, well, I guess they could do that under their own state AGs of grand jury law. They each one of them individually serve their governor.
Yeah,
but
the whole 26.
But no matter what they serve their governor, they don't have enforcement power.
Why not?
Because all they can do, look, the best thing I know of any grand jury, they can convene a special prosecutor or a special counsel to investigate things. They don't have enforcement power.
Yeah, because that's part of the judicial system. The judicial system does not
have
enforcement power. That's the executive branch.
Yeah, they don't have any more enforcement power than the Supreme Court does. Supreme Court issues edicts and orders all the time, rulings, but they have no enforcement authority. The only person that can enforce the order
is
the Supreme Court.
This is what it says. Hang on.
The executive.
No, this is what it says. The de jure grand jury hereby unanimously simultaneously arrest, redeem, and recall the bonds, insurance, sorority, and de facto escrow of the de facto office of governor, state of blank, real or imagined, in each of the 50 incorporated political subdivision states of the United States federal corporation, thereby rendering all such bonds, insurance, sorority, and de facto escrow instant, null, void, and non-negotiable, and the public wanting for identification for purposes herein. The term state also includes the term commonwealth when referring to the 50 political subdivisions of the United States federal corporation and similar de facto institutions. The order, the de facto office of governor of the state of blank of each of the 50 incorporated United States of federal corporation and all vestiges thereof is hereby reabsorbed into the respective de jure office of governor, e.g. New York, of each of the respective 50 free republics of the United States of America in 1787 upon the man or woman occupying each such office receiving notice of this warrant. Upon each notice, each such man or woman shall be free to resign within 3 days of receipt of this warrant without recourse to such resignation, to be replaced by the man or woman next in line to occupy such office.
Joe, I hate to tell you this, Joe, but it sounds to me like this outfit has assumed both a legislative and an executive role. They have combined the offices of the judiciary, the executive, and the legislature in one body. Yeah, everything you just said, they just gave an order they expressed a legislative action. They dissolved the office of governor, essentially. Place came with another one. They have literally assumed the authority of all three branches of government.
The people they're replacing are de facto. They're fake. They're a fraud. They're a corporation. They don't exist. They're not a real governor.
Good luck with that one. I wish you luck.
They're not real, though. The Organic Act of 1871 usurped our republic. Your republic. You said it yourself. You want to be constitutional, right?
The governing authority for any officer of any state is a state constitution. You have to look to that to see how they are instituted and how they are removed and how they are elected or how they are selected. So
okay.
That is always the governing authority of every state. That is the highest law of every state, the state constitution. Anything that's a constitution.
Okay, Sarge. So how did the governors of those states that abandoned their seats when the Civil War started, how did they get replaced, Sarge, unconstitutionally?
Well, they did.
By
we
act
already
of
know
war.
That.
By act of war.
Wait a minute. Remember, the states in the Confederacy and the Civil War, they seceded by acts of their legislature. Their legislatures voted to secede from the Union.
No, they never voted, Sarge. They never voted. They never voted. They abandoned their seats.
Their legislators voted for secession in every case, and then they formed the Confederacy. They did.
Well, no. I'm talking about they were never voted out. When they got up and abandoned their seats, they left their seats. Boop. Okay, now I left my seat of the House, right? Boom, I walk out, right? And now we're at war with the North, right?
Okay, I get your question now. Let me answer your question. Okay, what did Lincoln say to these states were? He said they were a state of rebellion. They had to be put down by military force. When they were put down by military force, martial law was instituted. The United States government formed military tribunals and martial law in all states under occupation. So under those auspices, the military governors who assigned jurisdiction in the various states would assign political personnel as they saw fit to govern the territories they were occupying until new elections were convened.
But there weren't new elections. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
There was not.
I made you the military letter the other night, Sarge. They were forced out of their seats.
Reconstruction. Have you read the history of Reconstruction?
Hey, you can call it whatever you want, Sarge. You can call it upside down. You can call it sideways. You can call it Reconstruction. You can call it building. It doesn't matter. They weren't replaced constitutionally. They were forced by the end of a barrel of a gun.
Oh, well, you can argue.
I
get your point. You can argue that. But I'm saying those territories were put under martial law. There's no doubt they were governed under martial law.
That's not fair.
I mean, when the Confederate Fourth Army in Northern Virginia surrendered, they negotiated the terms of the surrender. And when the Army of Texas surrendered, they also negotiated the terms of surrender. Amongst those terms of surrender was that troops would lay down their arms and they would submit to the authority of the military government's convening.
Submit to the authority. Thank you. Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, you can argue that they did, but they lost those arguments in court.
They lost the argument at the barrel of the gun at the war, and that's what the war was fought over.
Well, yeah, we know about the 14th Amendment. We know how problematic.
Now what happened, Sarge? Then what happened? We all got screwed. We all got incorporated. We all became large cap letters in our names. And then what happened sometime after that? The Federal Reserve took over, and we know what happened all after that.
Well, I'm not
going to
argue with you over much about that. I mean, you and me ain't got
too much
argument.
But that's the truth, Sarge.
That.
You know what I mean?
Okay, I know.
That's the truth.
We ain't got too much argument about that, but I'm simply saying, if you want to know the mechanism by which the existing elected governors of the Confederacy, elected officials were replaced, it was on the office.
No, Sarge, I don't want to get into that. No, I don't want to get into that. But I'm just trying to ask you, if we want to get to the truth, though, and we want to start back from scratch and start constitutionally, we have to go back to that time. You know what I mean? We got to, you know what I mean? Because you were
stuff. Do you mean go back in time for a better understanding, or do you mean actually go back to that time and reinvest everything forward from 1866?
Yeah, before the start of the Civil War, we have to go back to those seats and convene those seats, and we have to start from there. Whether we abolish slavery, whatever we do with we know it's wrong.
Lincoln refused. This was one of his big points on the Civil War. He refused to recognize the Confederacy as a legitimate government. He would not.
They were illegitimate. You're right, they were.
The United States declared itself a legitimate government in July 4th, 1776, and for all intents and purposes, it was. But if it had lost
we got to erase the 14th Amendment, I think, Sarge, really be honest with you.
If it had lost the war, Britain would have reimposed its sovereignty on the colonies. They would have certainly modified.
I know.
So, I mean, the only way you can maintain your sovereignty is with armed force, a military force that can protect your country and your borders. It was up to them to make sure they didn't lose the war so they could keep it.
Okay, Sarge, okay, let's agree with that, but you know what? Well, hang on, let me finish my point, because you're going to like this. Hang on, everybody's going to like this. In a republic, the minority, everyone has to seek, everyone should be happy, and everyone should have nobody should be forced to do one thing. That's what John Doe was saying, right? So therefore, it's wrong what happened. It's wrong. The minority did not get their rights heard. We were suppressed. They took over. And Lorianne should be agreeing with this, too, because I'm taking her side in this. The federal government usurped everybody's rights. You know, everybody got rule imposed upon them. That's not a republic. That's not constitutional.
Exactly.
That Bill of Rights were violated. Yeah.
Well, Joe, remember what I've said over and over
again? The federal
government
was never supposed to be a wolf, you know, lording over sheep. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Remember what I've said over and over again? War and war, all bets are off. That's what's so grim about fighting a war. When you fight a war, like I said, all fair and love and war, maybe it shouldn't be, but that's pretty much the way it is. Especially when you make somebody unconditionally surrender, then you know all bets are off.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. If we want peace and we want everyone to be happy, we got to go back to that time and reconvene them seats and start from scratch and start talking with each other and saying, hey, what's the Constitution say? You know, let's erase the Civil War. Got to go before that, you know, and let's not fight at the end of a barrel of a gun now and let one by be in charge of us, you know?
What the Constitution said, if you want to go back.
I'm going to interrupt. Please hold that thought. I'm going to interrupt for just a second. We only have about 2 minutes left for anybody out there that's listening to call in. So do
wow,
so now, 646-478-5284. And then press number 1 if you want us to bring us on. But, yeah, we're about to go into overtime. Make sure to tune in to my show, Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne, Sunday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. It's the day before the 22nd anniversary of 9/11, so I'll be dedicated to talking about that. Joe Gibson, go ahead and plug your show as well.
Tuesday, 7 p.m. I know I was on earlier last week, but that's because of voting thing. So Restoring Our Republic, Real Solutions, blogtalkradio.com/Joseph Gibson, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, and also be on the lookout because, you know, he'll do some on-the-fly episodes, like when he's calling legislators and stuff and talking about special topics. So if you have an account here on Blog Talk, make sure to follow Joe Gibson so that you can get notifications when he decides to do a show. Sometimes it's a spur-of-the-moment thing, so he's pretty good about that. Joe from Montana is back in. Oh, okay. Sorry, I was just about to do that same thing. Your co-host is taking over the show, Robert.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no kidding. Always do. Nah, not kidding. Okay. Look, I called in because I wanted to let you know I have no show to plug, so I just thought I'd say that.
Well, you had one the other day, but you didn't show up.
Great plug.
Thank God we ain't got Warren. I am a New Orleans wake up with
three
new
Gibson. I gotta say Gibson, so I know which Joe I'm talking to. But look here, Gibson.
Yeah.
Look, back to the 14th Amendment, man. What you're talking, this is what I think your complaint
about the 14th Amendment is, because it's certainly mine. The 14th Amendment introduced a new concept into jurisprudence called substantive due process. Have you ever heard that term before?
Yes.
Okay. And great mischief has been done under that concept, because they said the 14th and 5th Amendments of the Constitution have allowed this new concept called substantive due process, which, by the way, Clarence Thomas has severely criticized the notion of substantive due process, and he said the Supreme Court should reconsider a whole bunch of rulings that relied upon this concept of substantive
due process. Very smart man, yep.
Mm-hmm. I kind of got to agree with him, because I think with the new understanding we have of people's individual rights, I think the sort of abuses that led to or were the justification for creating the 14th Amendment are no longer necessary today, because I think the 14th Amendment is being used today to do more mischief than it is to do good.
That's right, Sarge.
Look at what they're trying to do. They're trying to do with Trump and the 14th Amendment.
Exactly.
By trying to get Trump off the ballot, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
You know, and that's... If you want to go back to before the 14th Amendment reconvened those seats, well, one of the big arguments against slavery was the whole three-fifths of a person, right?
Yeah, we can get around that, though. Yeah, it's stupid. You know, we don't have to get into
that
argument.
That was an anti-slavery position. It was a compromise because the slave owners wanted a slave to count as a whole person. The people who were against slavery didn't want them counted at all, since you didn't give them any rights. And if you counted them as a whole person, you would have more influence in the House of Representatives when it came to apportioning seats. So what they did was they settled on a compromise. Okay, you're not going to let them be citizens, so they shouldn't count as a whole person for determining how many seats the states get in the House of Representatives. But you won't give in on not making them anything at all, so we'll compromise in 3/5.
Yeah.
It was an anti-slavery provision.
How would you like to have a debate about the Constitution?
Oh, I love talking about the Constitution.
And what?
I'm
trying to hear Joe.
I'm asking Bob if he'd like to have. I'm asking Bob if he'd like to have a debate. If he would, then I'd moderate it. I wanted Sarge against either Nathan or Sarge versus John Doe, because I know hardly anything except for the written word of the Constitution. I'd like to know what the interpretations are according to the layman.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to have that, then you have to get into the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers as well.
You'd have to do more than that.
Yeah, you got to read both.
I
think a lot of people forget that there's actually a thing called the Anti-Federalist Papers, you know, the argument against what was it, you know. This country and our Constitution was not an easy sell on 13 states. And now when you think about trying to modify the Constitution, now you got to, you know, you've got way more than 13 states to contend with, right?
You'd have to do more than
that,
too. Go ahead, Laurie. The way I always Dr. Tolbert and other people who have read the Constitution and who actually believe, because I've heard some people say, well, I know the Constitution. My criteria is you have to read, of course, the Federalist and Anti-Federalist. Then you have to read the public and the private letters of the Founding Fathers.
That's right, Joe.
Then you have to publish your works, and then in a peer-reviewed journal, and then you have to debate, because everybody thinks they know the Constitution. The reason why I said layman is because I don't want to put undue pressure on Sarge or John Doe or Nathan or anybody else, because they have the Constitution in front of them. It would be interesting to find out the different points of view. So I thought maybe that way, if Bob would want to have a show, then I'd either come back on Friday to listen to it, or I could set one up and be the moderator. So, Sarge, since you're the first one invited, what do you think?
I like the idea, And I just want to make it absolutely clear. As many times as I've read the Constitution, I don't think I know it enough. And the reason is because of the enormous, massive body of common law precedent that has come about as a result of court rulings and actions and orders and everything else. It is massive. The Constitution is short, like 48 pages. The body of common law that has arisen around the Constitution is endless. I will never know the Constitution in my lifetime. There's just too much for me to learn. But I got a basic understanding of it. I do have a pretty good basic understanding of it.
Okay, so I'm inviting
you, know,
you
well,
Bob.
Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad if you're not the constitutional expert, you know, because even Obama was a constitutional lawyer, and he is evidence that you can be a constitutional attorney and not give a flying fuck about the Constitution
I did tell you guys
that's another thing about Obama is you cannot cite any court cases that he's been he says he's a lawyer, right? Well, you cannot cite anywhere where he's been in a courtroom on a case doing something. Right? You cannot find that.
You can't even find him at his university. He said he graduated from where? Princeton or Yale? You can't find him there.
No, there was one very significant case that he was involved in. I have to say this. It was a Citibank case versus Bayouks Roberson. I think that's the name of it. It led to all kind of mischief in the financial institution. And he was one of the lawyers on the case. I think that's the only one I can think of.
Right. Well,
I debated that guy on a radio call-in show in Chicago when he was a state legislator. And he was he was trying to get some gun control initiative through. And I knew he was lying about the facts and figures about the justification for this law when it came to criminal use of guns and homicide and all that other stuff. I knew he was lying, and I called him on it. And I conclusively whooped his behind in a debate, and he just said, well, we have to try to do something. Not do anything. But I tell you, he was like that, man. He doesn't know. As far as he's concerned, the reason he studies the Constitution is to figure it out how to get a way around it. He thinks there's an impediment to doing what he wants to do.
What did he say?
So it's a
paper of negative rights of what the government cannot do or something.
He did say that, but that's the only thing he was right about. Because the Constitution is a charter limb. It tells you what the government is forbidden to do to you. He wants the Constitution to be a charter of what the government's supposed to give you.
Right.
Do we want to debate next week on Bob's show or my show?
It really doesn't matter to me. The only problem I have with the Constitution is I've read it, but if you ask me to say something about it, then I have to actually go in and read what you want to know before I know what I'm talking about.
Of course. That's the way it should be.
You have to keep in mind, you have to try to understand the language that is used in it. And the language is very specific, and it's the language that was in common use at the time of its drafting. So what's extra hard about reading the Constitution is getting mind the terminology that you think it is based on how we refer to, you know, words here in 2023
Can you imagine what the confusion would be if
the
words out of space?
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that you can't read it out of today's mindset, and so that's why it's hard to grasp, because we have to kind of get familiar with how people use language, what was common you know, back at the time of the writing of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you have to get in that mindset somehow, and that's the challenge in order to really understand it.
Can you imagine what the confusion would be if the terms outer space was used back then?
Yeah.
Now, they used that a word for it. They used the word Evans.
Evans.
Well,
what?
For the outer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for the universe and all that, they call it the heavens. You.
Yep.
Now, there are several people that I do know. You know, one of them is, oh, heck. My mind went blank, but we usually have him bringing a boy's wife. She knows the Constitution. And then I also know Douglas B. Gibbs out of California. He teaches classes on the Constitution. I can see if I can get him here.
Right. Okay, that'll be good.
A few years back,
as a matter of fact,
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
A few years back, there was a guy that did a show on, it's now part of Blog Talk Radio. What's the name of that? Whatever it is, but Spreaker. And he had this woman on by the name of Chris Ann Hall. And
thinking of her. Thank you. You brought it up. She is awesome. I have listened
right.
to a lot of Chris
and
Ann
I,
Hall.
K-R-I-S.
Space ANN Hall.
Yeah,
if you don't know of her, man, you gotta watch her stuff.
Right. I talked with her and I asked her a question about, we were talking about precedents versus the Constitution, right? And how precedent is all they think about nowadays in the courts, right? Set a number of precedents. And what she said at that point is that's what they teach in law school. They don't teach the Constitution in law school. They teach precedent, you know, they teach precedent. You got to go by what the law says and not what the Constitution says, right?
Well,
to
go back to what Sarge was saying, there's such a mountain of evidence and documents that you have to take a look at, not just because of common law, but because, again, we have to interpret, as Lorianne was saying, not through our particular understanding of what we believe the terminology would be, but by their
mm-hmm.
terminology and the intent of the founders. And to do that, mm-hmm. you have to go to private and public letters and have to have a debate before you're considered a scholar.
With.
I don't know if any of these people in the Supreme Court are scholars, but who knows?
My point is,
just think about the younger generation right now to you guys. When you listen to a 15-year-old or even a 20-year-old and they're using language, they're saying phrases, you don't know what the fuck it means. It's like they have their whole new language. Like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, our language today is vastly different than the language back in our founding, and we have to try to keep that in mind. But, yeah, we literally don't know. And so now the next generation is interpreting stuff is based on, you know, a phraseology and terms that we're completely oblivious of. And, you know, unless you have a teenager in your household, you have no idea, you know, what their language is.
In 1826, when Noah Webster did his first dictionary, go look at that dictionary and look at the definition of some of those words in that dictionary, and then go back and look at those definitions in the more recent dictionary, and you'll see they're vastly different.
Yeah.
I'll take a look at the definition of man in today's dictionary and see what happens.
look, one thing you got to realize when you try to decipher.
Yeah, I still actually have a physical dictionary book from when I was like, gosh, I'm 10 years old. Somebody gave a good, you know, dictionary book as a graduation gift. And I actually at the time I thought, well, that's kind of lame. But, you know, later on I realized, like, this is really handy. You know?
Yeah, but one thing you've got to realize when you try this, when you try to decipher the founders and their language, one thing you got to realize is their language was erudite and formal. They interspersed the things they said with religious and biblical quotes, asides, and allusions, and they used words in the same way an artist uses a palette. They wanted to paint images. They were vivid. They were lush. And they were eloquent. And people don't speak like that anymore. It's an archaic way of speaking that is wonderfully eloquent, and I wish we could recover some of it today. You will hear echoes of it, people like Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was acquainted with the style of that writing. He would use that sort of language in his public speeches. But look, Joe Montana, look, there yeah. are seven articles in the Constitution, seven, and there's 27 amendments. Do you want to focus on the whole thing, or do you want to break it down into elements, say, Articles 1
That'll
and 3?
That'll be up to the contestants. You're one of them, so you pick them. You're number one, and then I'll tell the others if I – well, you tell the others. Because I don't normally go into the chit-chat.
I think maybe we ought to, because that's a pretty big subject to tackle in one show. I think we ought to concentrate on the first three articles. Article 1 deals
okay.
with Congress. Article 2 deals with the executive. And Article 3 deals with the judiciary. So we can start with that.
You're kind of far away.
Well, we could maybe deal with the others in another show.
In another show.
How about Article 1, because Article 1 encompasses Article 1, Section 8, which has the General Welfare Clause, and a guy named Bruto or Brutus or Brutus in the Anti-Federalist Papers roundly condemned that particular article. And since he was around at that particular time, he wasn't using our language and our phraseology and our mindset. So if you want to, Sarge, we can concentrate on just one article so as not to strain the other contestants. Okay.
Article one, then, is obviously...
Each contestant chooses at least one, you know. Sarge, you say, okay, I want to focus on this part of the Constitution. Gibson can say, okay, I want to focus on this part of the... And you can divvy it up. Give half the time to the one topic and then a half the time to the other side's topic.
Excuse me, Lori, this is my idea. And by the way, Joe,
yeah.
the General Welfare Clause is in
I'm
the preamble
on your
of the
idea,
Constitution.
But Joe, the
General Welfare Clause is in the preamble of the Constitution, not in Article 1, Section 8.
Oh, it isn't. Okay, thanks. All right, so let Lorianne, with your permission, darling, since I'm the one that suggested this, is that we'll take one particular article. Sarge is the number one person here. Joe, do you want to be a contestant? I didn't think you'd want to be a contestant.
When is it?
It'll be next Friday on Bob's show, or it'll be next Tuesday on my show, next Wednesday on my show.
Yeah, I want a piece of this.
Yeah,
I mean,
and John Doe, too, you know.
Yeah, John Doe, bring
him into the mix. He gets a turn at it.
I think that would probably be a good show. You will probably get a hold of him before I do, so you can notify him and tell him of what particular article. Because if we say to him, as you're suggesting, okay, John, pick an article, then Sarge might not know and Joe might not know what his pick is. Let's pick one, and then we'll go with it. So Joe and Sarge, which article do you want
to
go with?
I think the framers believe that Article 1, giving the authority to Congress, because they believe the most important branch of the federal government was Congress. So that's why they put it first in the Constitution. It's the longest of the three.
In regard to John Doe, I'm sure he will call in probably to my show on Sunday.
Okay.
So don't let me forget to bring this up with him, because he's a regular on my show, and I'm sure he'll come on. So
yeah,
it's a pretty good chance
good,
of it anyway.
Yeah.
Don't worry
about
good.
It. I'll be there.
And, okay, so Sarge, since Article 1 is selected by you, what about Joe? Can you concur or do you feel
I concur.
Another article? Okay,
I concur.
So we have two with Article 1. Laurie Ann, if you will, you can tell John.
Why did I concur?
Sure. And you can tell John that he can come in on. Bob Bennett, do you want it next Friday or do you want to come to my show?
Next Friday would probably be good, but, you know, what I was thinking was we could do, like, Article 1 on my show, maybe Article 2 on Lori Ann's show, Article 3 on your show, or just spread it out.
Article 12.
There's still four more after those three articles. There's still four more
And we don't know if
yeah,
the other
well,
people
will
have the
time. Yeah,
well, I'm
not going to do that this Sunday because I'm all 9/11 oriented.
Yeah,
but
she's
the following Sunday, I could take part in like a part two.
But this is our job. In the Constitution, there's seven of them.
All right. How about this? We'll do Article 1, and then we'll decide what to do with the other articles once the debate of Article 1 is over. How's that?
Yeah, that's the longest one. That'll take the most time.
Okay. And there might be a part two with that. So, Bob, you want it next Friday or what?
Sure. I'll go ahead and announce that on my for my show next Friday.
All right. Are you going to be the moderator or am I?
Oh, you can be.
Okay.
Your idea. All right. You take responsibility for it, buddy.
and I'll see if I can get my friend who teaches the Constitution on here with Douglas B. Gibbs out of California. So let's see if I can get him on.
And here. Joe and Sarge, maybe even Laurie Ann, when you go to Sally's show on Monday, because John Bell might be there. Who else is there that's likes the Constitution? Dr. Tolbert might be around. Nathan
might
be around.
Be there.
Nathan.
You know. Okay, and then you can let them know. All right, next Friday, Bob's show, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm the moderator, Article 1. We have Sarge and Joe at the very least. If nobody else shows up, these two can go at it. All right? So be prepared,
yeah,
guys.
Like
as a matter of fact,
what would the proposition of the debate be? What would the proposition of the debate
be? What was the proposition of what?
The debate. If we're going to have debate, we have to have a
Article 1. Yeah, okay. Who's ever interpretation of Article 1? Okay, let's get a little basic here. What is your, and, you know, I know you're very brief, and Joe, you're brief. What is your interpretation in a thumbnail sketch of Article 1? If we have differences, then that would be the basis for the debate.
Oh, man.
All legislative powers are to be endowed to a Congress of the United States, and the powers of that legislative power are supposed to be definitively enumerated, specifically.
Okay, Joe, do you agree? Do you have any differences?
Do I agree with that?
Yeah.
I didn't hear what he said. What did you say, Sarge?
All legislative power is endowed in a Congress of the United States. Two houses of it, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and those powers that it has are specifically and precisely enumerated, well, not precisely, but specifically enumerated in the Constitution.
Yeah, I guess, but that's that,
okay.
You know, I would say
okay,
no, the article is, all right, go ahead. All right, I'm,
then
all right, what do you want me to argue for an hour?
Debate. I mean, yeah, so, I mean, you can talk, you have 2 hours next Friday to talk about it. So if Sarge suggests something you agree with it, then we go on to find out whether there's a disagreement, and I'm sure there will be. And you two can debate it.
What Article 1, you got to be specific because one section explains how members are chosen and their responsibilities and their compensation for service. I mean, the power, you know, I mean, you know, so.
Well, you have 2 hours to talk about all of it.
Obviously, in a summary of the proposition, I didn't detail everything we could talk about.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
So that would be right. So then you two can go at it on Friday. You two, of course, have something to it is that large for you to find some difference of opinion. And then with Nathan showing up, John Doe.
And it'll be educational
Talbot.
For the rest of us.
Right.
Oh, man. I'll tell you right now,
John Doe is going to be arguing the Declaration more than he is the Constitution.
No.
I'll tell
no,
you
no.
that right now. John Doe is motivated
no,
by
he's
the Declaration.
Not. Joe
more
is than right. Joe is right. No, he's not. Because I'm moderating
Which,
poor John
that
Doe.
That's an inadequate perspective because when we talk about the original language of the Constitution, well, the Declaration of Independence was also written with the same, you know, way
language.
Of writing at the time,
March.
You know, so it does have play its part. So John Doe would probably be good in that conversation to take that.
And all he's
going to
say is,
for
you don't have
one.
The powers and the principles and the Constitution. He's going to say the same thing he always says.
He is the Declaration man more so than a Constitution man. I'm telling
okay,
you that right now.
And if he wants to join, there will be no more than three. If John Doe shows up, because he would really love to talk about the Constitution, then all three of you can get into it. But then again, since you guys know my style, it will be cut short.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I will cut you short.
Cut him short. Yeah, cut him short. Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then we will go on to the more logical direction of the topic and particular section of that topic that you guys are going to be talking about. Okay?
Amen.
Yeah.
All right.
Agreed?
Well, make no mistake about it, though. The heart and soul of the Constitution is the Declaration, but its brain.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Anybody who wants to talk about it can. I'm just saying we're not going to ramble.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I'm saying, well, you better be prepared for John Doe. That's all I got
to
say.
Yeah, and Montana Joe is good at keeping people on task. I will say that. Like,
yeah, he will do a good job of that. Joe will definitely keep him on.
That is for sure. Thank you, Lori.
No,
thank you, Sarge.
Yeah.
I know, Joe, you agree. Otherwise, you wouldn't want me doing the interviews. Don't, yeah. Uh-huh. You got that right. So John Doe is welcome, but no more than three, because if we have four or more, then it's going to turn into a clusterfuck. And I don't think that would be, productive.
We can always ask Brother Warren for his point of view now.
We're not having it, Sarge. Sorry.
No.
All right.
Please.
Okay.
Nobody talk to him about it.
I can imagine that one, boy.
We don't need Warren involved.
No. You can imagine for 2 seconds.
Not need to be involved in this at all.
Yeah. You can imagine for 2 seconds, Sarge, because as soon as I hear Warren, this is Brother Click. That's all that's going to happen.
Yep, good.
Okay.
I like your idea, Joe Montana. Just put him into the green room. You know, put him into the green room and let him talk to himself for 10 minutes.
Boy, that
and
would
nobody
be so
else
good. What Lorianne's talking about is when I was talking to her sometime when I was having my show, and I said, you know what, in order to have some fun, when the real blabbers come on, just put him in the green room and make him think that people are listening. And then I'll go in there, or she'll go in every, you know, every 30 seconds or so, keep talking.
That's dirty.
You know, yeah, they're talking a mile a minute.
That's
that'd be great. Oh, yeah.
Hey, but you know
what,
though,
so we got
remember?
Yeah.
Remember when me and Joe Gibson
See, we
were
do have this little evil fucking dirty
order.
On our shoulders sometimes, don't we?
That's right. What's Arch? Sorry.
Yeah, well, when me and Joe were having that discussion about that executive order, and we were differing on the parameters of it and whether or not it was constitutional and whether or not it was necessary, this is the kind of thing I think I'd like to get, you know, aired out.
Do you want to talk about that, Joe and Sarge? You want to talk about the executive order?
Well, what we were doing was kind of a peripheral discussion dealing with the Constitution and with the parameters of the executive order itself, and that discussion delved into the Constitution, and particularly its constitutionality or lack thereof.
All right. Okay, so we're agreed on Article 1. You guys can take it from there. We show up next Friday. And to add to that peripheral discussion, talking about executive orders, from what I understand, an executive order which was given to the president was only supposed to be his summation, his idea, his concept of what a law that was passed by Congress was supposed to be. He was not supposed to use that law in order to create legislation. That's the way
correct.
I understand.
Absolutely correct.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
Oh, okay. Hey, all right. Okay, Bob. Thank you, and I'll be – so we'll have the discussion
Lorianne, of course, will be the megaphone, because everybody will be coming to her show on Sunday. She'll be on other shows, and she'll let them know. Who goes to Sally's show? Joe, you go to Sally's show.
I will.
You can let her know if Dr. Tolbert wants to show up. Also, I went to the John Birch Society. They have speakers there who will talk about any topic that you want. Contact them. Don't know if they'll come on Blog Talk Radio. You know, they've been doing pretty good tours.
Excuse me, Joe, and one more thing about executive orders. The law applies to all citizens. The Constitution of the law applies to all citizens. Executive orders only apply to the president's subordinate.
Okay, thank you for interrupting me, Sarge, in the middle of the sentence to tell me about that. So what was I saying? Oh, that's right. Sarge was interrupting me. That's right. Okay. Yeah, I got it, Sarge. Thanks. But so what was I saying? Oh, yeah.
Real?
So if you anybody want to go to the John Birch Society and take a look at the speakers they have available there, because they're there to be contacted to speak, and you can bring them on your shows, guys. John Birch Society, I think they're probably in our favor.
Sounds good.
Bad idea? Or crickets? Ah, fuck you all. I don't give a
Roger. Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye.
What happened?
Oh, boy.
I missed something.
I was pulling a Ron DeSantis and looking around to see what other people's reactions were before I reacted myself.
Well, if you do go to the John Birch Society, I mean, look, everybody has got a show. Except, well, Sarge doesn't, and I have every once in a while. Bob's a good idea for you. And Lorianne, you're very good at interviews. And the caller, I don't know if you have a show, but if you'd like to, you know, John Birch Society. And what's the name of that institute that teaches the Constitution? They teach the Constitution freely.
Heritage?
That's it, the Heritage Foundation.
Heritage
right.
Foundation.
Yeah. So
well,
maybe one of these days.
I'm pretty sure that there's still that what's her name? Chris Ann Howell still has her stuff up on YouTube if you want to go there too.
But follow her on Rumble because YouTube censors her sometimes, and she'll put up on Rumble instead what she knows YouTube's going to censor.
That sounds like
you guys. I cannot emphasize enough that whoever you follow on YouTube, check to see if they have a duplicate account on Rumble. And start following them on Rumble instead. You know, quit feeding the beast. If you can find them on Rumble,
good idea.
Which most of them are wise
enough
you know, they are backing themselves up on Rumble and sometimes BitChute because they know that, you know, YouTube's policies are just ridiculous.
Bullshit.
Well, you know, that's the thing.
Selectively applied.
Now that's the thing. I used to be on YouTube until they got rid of me, and now I'm on BitChute and Rumble, so for my daily updates that I do that are more or less like Rush Limbaugh did, but I do those on Rumble.
Right.
That Chris Ann Hall girl that you're talking about, that sounds like the woman that you wanted to interview, Bob.
Yeah, I would love to have her on my show, too. Because she really, like, states the case for, like, electing your sheriffs and how important they are.
Oh, God, that's a great topic.
Because your sheriffs have the ability to refuse to enforce federal or state law that they feel violates the Constitution.
Oh, that's a great
and violates
topic.
Laws.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah.
You know, they can refuse both. You know, we are not going to cooperate with you. You want to do this shit here? We are not going to cooperate. We are not going to prosecute anybody for this crap. It's bullshit. You know, the sheriffs can decide that locally and federally. They can go, FBI, get the fuck out of my state. We're not cooperating with you.
Yep.
But I don't think that's entirely true, because I did some research, because a lot of people say the same thing you just did, Lorianne. So I did a little bit of research, and it seems that if the feds come in, yeah, they have to come in with cooperation with the sheriff. But if the feds really wanted to, there would be a real battle, and the feds just could win. Feds just could win the jurisdiction battle.
But
I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sure,
you know,
but I think...
What was it, the Bundy Ranch here in Northeast Oregon? That standoff is Clue. It's really Clue. Because it was sheriff, local law enforcement, local people going up against the federal government, and the federal government was like, yeah, no, we really shouldn't open fire. Nobody was giving them reason to.
I remember that.
And it would have just,
I remember that.
Yeah.
I wish it did. I wish that was a popcorn fight right
there.
Like,
get the hell out of here.
But then again, you got these cities like San Francisco that declare themselves sanctuary cities and shit, and that's to get around the immigration law by the feds and stuff like that. So
but that doesn't matter to DeSantis or to Abbott, because they're sending up their illegals to the north.
Yep.
and now the North is complaining.
I know, and now the mayor of New York City, that it's supposed to be a sanctuary city, is saying, hey, we can't take anymore.
That's what I
know.
Get.
You know,
and Portland is the same way. Like, we're overrun with homelessness in Portland, but Portland's supposed to be a sanctuary city. That's just like, you know, we got homelessness up like something like 300% since Trump was president already.
Oh, wow.
It's been 2 years.
Oh, wow.
It's up 300%.
And it's same.
And they're
the
not part of the unemployment statistics, by the way. They're not included because, you know, you only have to be applying for unemployment or currently on unemployment in order to count. So the reality is, the real unemployment rate is close to 7%.
Right.
When you factor in all the new homeless, all that can't afford to fucking live, lose their, you know, they get kicked out of their apartments or they foreclose on their house, and now they're in the street.
Never happened in this country. Never happened in this country.
That's what I did. That's what I did my update on yesterday, because and it's on Rumble, but I put there, Eric Adams, the idiotic mayor of New York City, said that illegals were welcome. Come to New York and you'll be welcome. They came and were sent there, and now he is bemoaning that his city will be destroyed because of Governor Abbott and the illegals.
That's right.
So,
That's right. I read the article, and that article had a copy of his first email where he says, we welcome illegals. I think he said in that particular email that they're not going to change. And then the second email was, I surrender, uncle. 110,000 illegals have been sent to my city. Ouch.
Yeah, that's what I did my update on yesterday. And it's on Rumble. It's also on BitChute, but I call them my updates. I call NWCR's Removing the Liberal Blindfold. So if you want to go and see it, there.
Oh, all right. Oh, by the way, Sarge, I try to look up your past shows under Sarge Says. I only came across two.
Oh, there were more than that.
That's all that popped up.
They must have vanished. By the way, what were you just speaking about, Robert?
Oh, I was just talking about my daily updates that I usually do. It's on I do them on Monday through Thursday, and then I do my show on Friday. But all of my updates are on Rumble and BitChute both, and I call them NWCR's Removing the Liberal Blindfold. And yesterday's was about Eric Adams and his saying that illegals were welcome, but now he's crying because they're destroying his city. Well, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, now what do you think El Paso had to put up with all them years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were more than 100,000 people that came through El Paso and burdened their system and all those other towns on the Mexican border.
Exactly.
And not to mention how they
anywhere near the resources of New York City.
Yep.
And
man, these people are just beyond belief.
Forget them. The thing is, when these people, as you're talking about, Sarge, that they were coming across the past few years, they had the audacity to park their asses on the actual property of some of the ranch owners and leave the garbage on their ranch.
There's a theory that I've heard Dan Bongino talk about things haven't gotten bad enough for things to change, right? And he couches this in what happened in New York in the late 80s where Giuliani ran in the late 80s and he didn't win, and they had, 2,000, in the next 5 years, it was like 2,000 homicides, and then he ran in 93 and won in 93 and things changed. Things haven't gotten bad enough for people in like New York City and Portland and other places like that to change, to make that change that should be made to get these liberal people out, the Democrats out. Now, will it make a difference in a city like Portland? Probably not, but it might make a difference in like New York City, So things are getting to that point where they are getting bad enough. And as evidenced by the little bitch that is Eric Adams starting to cry like a little bitch,
Well, Lee Zeldin came awfully close to becoming governor. He did far better than anybody expected. He did give the rats in Albany a bit of a panic.
Who was that, Sarge? I didn't hear you.
Sarge, you're sounding far away again.
Oh, Sarge, what's up with your phone?
Yeah, Lee Zeldin gave a start to a lot of the rats in Albany because he came much closer to winning than they expected. And he dragged along a lot of people with him to victory in the state legislature.
Yep.
That begs the question what the caller was talking about how much are we going to take before we actually say, oh, my God, I think it's actually going to be the illegals who are being hired as cops to knock down your doors without a warrant, and then maybe the people will wake up enough.
Yeah, maybe a couple of them will get shot trying to come through the doors, too.
Yeah. The thing is that we still trust the cops and we still trust the politicians. We still think that they're going to intercede against the corrupt cops and the corrupt politicians, but most people don't realize that my subjective opinion, 90% of the cops and 90% of the politicians are corrupt enough to bring America down to its knees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I hate to say it, but I think that I don't know if it's as bad as you say it is, Joe, but I don't think it's as I don't think enough cops and soldiers are as faithful to the idea of the Constitution as there once were. And yeah, that is worrisome.
I do have some encouraging words from Sheriff Mack this week. He said that if the elected sheriffs got together and thought about it, that would be one way to stand up. And I couldn't agree with them more.
Right.
One way to stand up how?
What'd you say, Joe?
To stand up by saying no, as Lorianne was talking about, and as has been mentioned in other shows. If the sheriffs have the, even have a modicum of the, not only the responsibility, but the power to say no to the federal government, then since we elect them, then they can be our, there can be our sentinels. That's what they're paid for.
Right. Yep.
Well, right. That, and that was another point that Chris Ann Hall made, was that the highest constitutional law enforcers are the sheriffs.
No,
well,
for the people.
Well, you know, that that argument, Joe, I understand it, but I don't agree, because, yes, the power is supposed to be in our hands. But if the power is in our hands, then how come America is at this, at the stage of corruption and decay that it's at today?
Right.
Well, that's because we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Well,
exactly.
Joe is right when he says the people are the power, because after all, every elected official, every agency, every bureau derives its power from what the collective mass gives it and allows it to do. But therein lies the rub. They're the ones with the guns and the authority, the direct authority to do it. That's
there
what we've got to realize. Yeah, they derive their authority from the consent of the governed, but when they get out of control, we all know how difficult it is to rein them back in, because of the power and authority we also give them.
Precisely. And people are still trying. Sorry, Bob.
You know, as evidenced by what's happening with Trump, where obviously he is the people's choice, right? If you look at the polls and everything else, he is the people's choice. They continue to go after the man, right? The consent of the governed, the people want Donald J. Trump in that office. They want him there. And it's a majority of the people that want him there now. So,
well, you know what I'm doing right now? I've been, ever since the show started and since before, I've been filling out envelopes, you know, writing address, you know, to mail out stuff to voters in my district. Filling out envelopes and writing, you know, man, I got all the addresses and names right in front of me right here, and I'm mailing out a message, you know, to vote for me and stuff like that, what I stand for. And this, you know, I'm constantly doing something, you know, always. I'm never stop. Well, why, if everyone else was doing that, how could we be losing? We wouldn't lose.
Because you are aware of how corrupt the government is on all fronts. Most people will refuse. I was like that. I remember back in 2006, 2008, when I got my 2006, when I got my epiphany. Because I always knew that government on all levels, municipal, state, federal, they were corrupt. They had the back rooms. Okay, so I said, all right, I give you that. So you're in a couple hundred thousand a year. Okay, fine. But then when I started to realize that these people would actually sell America down the river, would actually allow us as Americans to be tortured, right? To get away with habeas corpus, to get away with due process, because they were just nothing more than selfish. They weren't evil. They were just normal fucking people who went to a party, got blackmailed with a kid, or got offered a few bucks, and then from then on, they had them. That was it.
Yeah.
And everybody in Congress is either corrupt or corruptible. Whether they want to be corruptible or not, they are. You realize it. Everybody else here on the line realizes it. But how many people that we know realize it to the extent that we do?
Right.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that Lori Ann just said in the chat room, we haven't even talked about 9/11 on this show tonight, and it's just a couple of days away from the 22nd anniversary. But
yeah.
Lori Ann's going to discuss that.
My
show
is dedicated to that. I started my show 2 years ago. It was the 20th anniversary of 9/11. My wake-up call day, you know, that was when I only passively paid attention to politics, but after 9/11 and on TV that day watching the towers fall in on themselves, and both my best friend Dave and I, that we went to computer school together, and he was roommating with me. That morning we were scheduled to go to class, and then
he turned on the TV news and I turned on my computer, and there was the headlines of the first tower being struck. And we're like, what the fuck? Like, is this a movie or something? Like, yeah. At first we thought it was like a movie. Like, is this like a promo for like some fucking Mission Impossible movie or something? I don't know. Like, it that's what it seemed like. Like, and then it was like, no, this is real. And he and I both realized it at like the same time, and we're like, what the fuck? You know, so of course we didn't go to class. Class was actually canceled. But then so, we were just like, you know, glued to the TV and just seeing all this stuff in the reports and changing channels. And, you know, I'm on the computer looking at the latest, you know, that's being on the computer online and what they're saying. And then, you know, the TV and, I mean, yeah, like that day, holy shit, like, my friend Dave and I, the whole time we're like, there is no fucking way that this happened like that, you know, like, this is crazy, you know. That was when they were still, like, live broadcasting, like, people jumping from the buildings to escape the fire and shit, before they censored that. Like, we were just like, oh, my God. You know, this was controlled demolition. This was planned. There is no fucking way this could have happened without our government knowing about it. And it just started that day, like instantly. It's like, this was controlled demolition. Like, he and I were both like, you know, all the arguments, like, and he and I would watch documentaries on blowing up buildings. Like, we both liked that. You know, what does it take to blow up these big fucking buildings in on itself and so it doesn't destroy everything around it?
Right.
And, like, before 9/11 happened.
And Lori,
okay.
I'll
shut up.
And Lori, think about this. And I just thought about this today, about the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center. And how that could be considered as a proof of concept in terms of getting explosives into the interior of the building, right? It didn't do much damage, but they proved that they can get them there. Where they parked that truck that exploded, truck in 1993 that exploded, you know, it's proof of concept.
And look
that
how
it can
minimal overall that damage was.
Yep.
Yep.
No
well,
way
you know,
that damage would justify bringing, you know, two large towers down and then World Trade Center 7 based on office fires that had obviously burned out. Like, you can, like, they literally have cracked the heat signature. And, you know, all these places where they said, oh, it was so hot that, you know, it weakened the beams and that's why it pancaked. No. You know, no. They showed the satellite heat images going around. And it's like, you know, it did what fires usually do. It consumed what's there and then moved on to the next room and the next and burned out as it went along. So there's no fucking way that, you know, that building came down based on office fire.
No.
You know, that
no,
the
forget,
NIST report,
about,
the NIST
no,
report
right.
was the biggest piece
down.
Of bullshit. You know, iron in the
yeah.
coffin. Yeah.
Forget about the NIST
yeah.
explanation, but I don't know if you guys know this, but I read that 2 years prior, the responsibility for the security of the entire World Trade Center was taken over by the Bush family.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There was a changeover in security and jurisdiction 2 years prior. The Port Authority of New York originally had control over World Trade Center and stuff. And they handed it over to, I believe, like, it was like the precursor of Homeland Security, like,
right.
a
section of the FBI kind of fucking thing, on oversight kind of intelligent, you know, like I said, there was a group of intelligence agencies that shared information with each other, and they were called a certain thing at the time, and I forget what it was, but it eventually grew into Homeland Security after 9/11.
I know that day totally changed my life, because at that point in time, I had a career, and it was in printing. And within months after 9/11, almost all printing in the United States came to a dead standstill, and I lost my job, so I had to restart and begin my own business. And I've still got it going, but it just totally changed everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah. But they don't want paper copies of anything anymore.
No.
That's the even crazy part. Look at how much stuff that's stored digitally in hard drives and servers and stuff, and yet no paper copies. This stuff isn't actually printed out. They don't want paper copies. If there's paper copies, then that's potential evidence. So having it be all digital and then, oh, no, we got hacked by the Chinese, and it destroyed all this, you know, evidence that we had in all these cases, you know.
Well, yeah, and then going back to soldiers.
Yep.
You know, going back to what Sarge and I have been talking about with the whole thing with Jamie Gorelick and that her memo that separated, that put a wall and that stopped people from sharing information, you know, about what might be happening in terms of up until 9/11, you know, and it's like, okay, there are a lot of things that led up to that things that were questioning, but basically the biggest one was the fact that that memo by Jamie Gorelick.
But let's not forget the reason for it, though. The reason for it was that they feared that all of these intelligence apparatuses working together might be able to uncover the murky, mysterious, and undoubtedly illegal campaign contributions from foreign sources. The wall of separation was meant to minimize that likelihood.
Right.
Our CIA funded Osama bin Laden. You know, we funded the Taliban. We, you know, worked with them, and you know, it's all before. I mean, like, we basically created our own monster, and that's really the truth of it.
Bin Laden did not blow up the Twin Towers. He had nothing to do with it.
Oh, Bin Laden? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said he didn't.
Bin Laden was a CIA asset. Yeah.
Also, the show's only got 4 minutes left, so I'm going to remind people, 9 o'clock on Friday, Bob's show, there's going to be Sarge and Joe and possibly John Doe talking about the Constitution, offering their different points of view. I will be the moderator at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So Lorianne will be telling whoever she comes in contact with. Bob, you don't have any shows on except Friday. Whoever I come in contact with, I will let them let John Doe and Nathan know, and they can stand by. And Sally will be notified, I'm sure, on Monday. So unless you guys are going into more overtime, I just wanted to say this before I forgot.
Well, my show won't go more overtime. That's as far as it'll go.
Well, at least the recording part of it. That usually ends within a couple of minutes after the hour. Yeah, the bonus hours. That then it goes into non-recording time.
I will let Gunner and Ron Reck know what's going on as well.
Yeah, he's on his show now.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. I'll probably dial into that after we wrap this one up, like we usually do. And I usually beat Robert to it.
Yeah, you usually do, because I've got to get rid of all of my stuff. So it looks like Mike just dropped. So.
All right. So your show's coming to an end in a couple of minutes then, totally?
Yeah. Yep, totally. It, okay. It'll just yep. end. Lori Ann can go.
All right, guys. Yeah. All right, if you got
well, last Sunday after the bonus hour ended, it hung up on us. Like oh, well. About like
yep.
I think
I remember
it was
that.
Like 10 or 12 minutes after. Yeah, it hung up. It ended everything, even on my direct connect. Everything just shut down. Like, thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye. You know, and it was, like ended
yep.
everything. I'm like, okay.
Yep. Well,
I can
that was my 2-year anniversary show, and Blog Talk hung up while we were, you know, just a little over
and
past
they,
overtime.
They need to stop doing things like that.
That pissed me off.
But we're right at 10 o'clock now, so this show is going to end pretty darn quick. So I really thank you guys for being here. This has been a great show, and we had some good discussions. And we've got a couple of shows coming up this weekend and over the week. So it's going to be a great time. We're going to have some good shows coming up.
Yep.
All
Sunday
right,
night,
see you guys.
This is the Libertarian. Be there
okay.
or be square.
And I got my
good night,
ending show
card,
so here we go.